Fully Threaded Radio, episode 138.
I think as long as money stays cheap, you're going to see more consolidation. I think there are companies that didn't have great succession plans that are maybe being bailed out, which is good for them, really. And or they, you know, skipped the succession plan they had in place because there's enough money for them to retire now.
It's time for Fully Threaded Radio.
It is Fully Threaded Radio, voice of the FCH Sourcing Network. If you buy, sell, manufacture, import, covet, or otherwise fetish industrial fasteners, well, this is the podcast for you. We're glad you clicked in. Eric Dudas here, and the co-host of Fully Threaded is here with us as well. He's fashion maven and fastener taxonomist extraordinaire, Brian Musker. Hey, Brian.
Good.
Doing all right?
You got the thing wrong. It's fashion maven is Bob Beer, okay? I don't even try and get near that.
Episode after episode, we go over this.
I know. You get it wrong every time. Other than that, I am great. Had a great workout, and then I had good breakfast after that, so everything's pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in a good mood. Did you, by any chance, have waffles?
I did not, but I know why you're asking the question. I still have some of that left.
Oh, yeah. I told you all about this weekend. It's maple syrup season here in Northeast Ohio. And I tell you, they make some great stuff around here. And we went out to an old heritage style farm and watched them producing this stuff and then got to taste it. And oh, my gosh, it's good. You know, reminds me, last season, we received some maple syrup from Ralph Lamondo over there at
Bellmetric. Yes, we did.
Over at Bellmetric, correct.
Yeah.
And man, that stuff was good too. Now, he produced that stuff, I think it was in Connecticut.
Yeah, and he's very proud of it, and justly so, actually. And it tastes very, very good.
Well, at your house, I had it on the waffles, but at my house, I used that syrup to cure some bacon, which I eventually smoked over applewood, and it was wonderful. But you know, Brian, this is not a cooking show.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, I'll take my apron off, okay?
Sorry to do that to you, folks, if your stomach's growling.
Yeah, fastener related. Well, the relation is through Bellmetric and Ralph Lamondo giving us some great maple syrup.
Yes, thank you for making that connection, Brian. And Fully Threaded Radio is a great way to directly connect to all things fastener related. So once again, everyone, welcome to episode 138 of the podcast. This time we're publishing just a little early on March 14th, 2019. We have a full episode in store for you, everyone. It's actually another one of our double features, I'd say. We sit down and talk with Bob and Rob Reynolds of InSQL Software. Now, they've been longtime partners of the FCH Sourcing Network and sponsors of the podcast. And we wanted to get them on to really discuss the subject of online fastener sales. This is a piece of the InSQL ERP platform that a lot of their customers are asking for and using. But there are some lessons to be learned from this conversation in general if you're a fastener distributor and you're doing business online, or if you're thinking about it, which many of you probably should be.
If not everyone.
There's also some discussion of the InSQL Direct Connect system, which many of you know the FCH Scrubber plays a part in. Our second big feature of the episode is a far-reaching conversation with Charlie Kerr of Kerr Lakeside. As usual, it's a far-reaching talk, and we cover a lot of topics, some of them planned, some not. and we certainly went overtime on this one, Bry.
Yeah, it's sort of easy with Charlie.
It certainly is, but I think you'll enjoy the conversation, everyone. It's predominantly fastener related. Plus, we spoke with Paula Evitz of the MWFA. Hopefully, you're all attending Fastener Tech 19. Paula's got the overview of what's in store for this year's rendition. As always, Mike McNulty has all the Fastener headlines. This time he's joined by Mark Strandquist of Worth, and they take a look at sagging FDI numbers. Don't worry, folks, it's not a real sad story, but you definitely don't want to miss the analysis there. Plus, Carmen Vertulo has the Fastener Training Minute, and he speaks about L9 bolts, which is a material that a lot of people hear about and not too many people know much about. Well, listen to this, and you'll be ahead of the game.
Good. Okay.
That's what Carmen's good at, right?
Yeah, right.
We've got a full lineup of sponsors for this episode too, Bri. Help us out there.
Yes, we have. The title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Steelfast and Brighton Best International. Steelfast, for service you deserve and people you trust. Brighton Best International, tested, tried, and true. Also sponsoring Fully Threaded Radio are Buckeye Fasteners, BTM Manufacturing, InSequel Software, Eurolink Fastener Supply Service, Mac Brooks Fastener Fair USA, ND Industries, Parker Fasteners, Vault Industrial Plastics, The Worth Group, and Solution Industries, home of Solution Man. So thanks to all of you.
Yes, thanks to all our sponsors and to every one of you for listening in. You're a big piece of the equation as well. We always enjoy hearing feedback, so please don't hesitate. The email address is ftr@fullythreaded.com. On Twitter, the handle's fullythreaded.
Yeah, don't be frightened to make a comment. We've got very thick skins, and we're quite happy to hear suggestions, okay? Well, they're not that thick, okay?
Yeah, Bri, don't open yourself up for punishment.
No, I know. It's silly. We'll stop that.
Fortunately, most of the comments that we receive are pretty productive and sometimes pretty humorous. Keep them coming, everybody. I tell you, if there's another thing you can do to help us out, tell your friends and your associates about the podcast and make them aware of who's talking about what. It's amazing how many times we hear people that just picked up the show. And if you're a new listener, by the way, welcome.
Yeah.
We have a huge archive of back episodes as well. When we come back from the break, we're going to jump right into the conversation with Charlie Kerr. So since we just tipped the hat to some of our sponsors, might as well point out that I received an email here from Craig Penland over at Eurolink. He wanted everyone to know that he's put a new sales manager in place, and that's Josh Winkler. If you're looking to make contact with Eurolink, give Josh an email at josh@eurolinkfss.com. Tell you, every time I turn around, it seems like there's another inquiry flying across the FCH sourcing network heading over to Eurolink. So I think business is pretty good over there these days.
Yeah, maybe for metrics as a whole, actually.
Yeah, well, we'll touch on that during the conversation with Charlie today.
All right.
So if you are a new listener, let's also point out at this moment that we're the people who bring you the FCH sourcing network found at fastenersclearinghouse.com. It's a huge online resource for you whenever you need to find a fastener or locate a vendor for a part. It's free to use and it's commodity driven. So you basically type in what it is you're looking for. We show you who's got it out there. Then you can get in touch with them directly. On the flip side of that, if you're still dragging your feet getting your company onto FCH, it's a great time. If you go to fastenersclearinghouse.com, we've revised the membership programs and we tried to make it a little bit friendlier in terms of suiting various kinds of distributors. So take a click out there and jump on soon because we're still running that spring cleaning special and that basically waives the setup fee. FCH Sourcing Network. End of commercial, Bri.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fastenersclearinghouse.com with an S, okay, after a fastener.
The S is so important to this podcast and to the website. Thanks once again for joining in. There's a lot to cover today, so we'll play a couple messages and we'll be right back to put a wrench to this one. It's Fully Threaded
Radio.
Brian and Eric, your online Fastener Talk Radio brothers in thread. Fully Threaded Radio.
When top quality and outstanding service are at the top of your list in fastener suppliers, turn to Steelfast. Since 1976, Steelfast has grown to become an industry-leading importer and manufacturer of the highest quality industrial fasteners, specialty items, and automotive parts. Our array of facilities across North America and in Asia, along with full quality control labs and ISO 9001:2008 certifications, ensure the highest quality parts, and at Stelfast, they're delivered with undisputed service excellence. We're family-run and dedicated to your success. Our customers have come to depend on the expertise of our staff and the quality of our products. We also offer a wide range of secondary services to meet some of the toughest requirements you might have. Contact Stelfast today through our website at www.stelfast.com and put us to work for you. Stelfast. Service you deserve. People you trust.
At Bright & Best, we continue to expand our wide range of products, including stainless steel and metric fasteners. Our family of brands include Preferred, U.S. Anchor, and Ironclad Performance Wear. BBI has been a trusted partner since 1925. With award-winning hand tools, gloves, and drywall screws, BBI is the largest master distributor of fasteners in the USA. Tested, tried, and true. We are Bright & Best. To learn more about Bright & Best, visit brightandbest.com.
Parker Fasteners is your premier cold heading manufacturer, forging the future with precision and quality as our top priority. When you think of domestically produced sockets and tamper-proof screws from alloy and stainless, including A286, think Parker Fasteners. Our lockout line of security fasteners feature high torque, oval center pin design, and unique lobes that provide one-of-a-kind security for your customers. Our in-house 3D printing capability makes the prototyping process fast and affordable, and we're ready to produce your large or small run orders with highly competitive pricing and unbeatable lead times. So, forge the future with Parker Fasteners. Visit Parker Fasteners online today at parkerfasteners.com.
Hey mates, Brian Muscat. Regardless of the required size, material or finish, Eurolink has the European resources to meet your demands for hard-to-find metric fasteners. We're the one-stop source for all of your metric needs, saving you time and money searching for these parts while fulfilling all of your requirements. How do we do it? Eurolink offers access to more than 100,000 quality C-class parts with the ability to solve your toughest metric fastener supply issues every time. Hard-to-find metric fasteners? Delivered. Just think of us as your heavy metal rock stars. To learn more about how we can rock your world or request a hassle-free quote online, visit EurolinkFSS.com. That's EurolinkFSS.com.
Hey, this is David with ND Industries. You're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
You know, Brian, one of the great things about being a part of a fastener association, like everyone knows part of the MWFA, but we're also part of the NCFA, among others, and you get to go to these great plant tours.
I know. I agree.
And I was so glad that you were in town when we went last week over to Auto Bolt, and we got to check that out. A real stalwart here in Cleveland, and they produce amazing products, and they have a great facility. It was one of the most interesting of all the plant tours that I've been on.
Actually, the level we are at the industry, we're so removed from anything that's like the mechanical part of it, and to see, you know, as we've seen before once in one of our visits in Cleveland, these machines just making bolts is really amazing to watch, actually. I mean, if you've got any mechanical look, yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Everyone who works in this industry needs to get into a facility like this one, and I guess that's all that needs to be said. Well, anyway, so we're standing there in the lobby of Auto Bolt getting ready for this tour. We're checking in with the receptionist, and she waves us through. The door opens. Who's the doorman there that morning? None other than Mr. Charlie Kerr of Kerr Lakeside, and he's with us now. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, how you doing today?
We're doing good.
I was more than happy to open the door for you and only you because you and only you were wearing the premium quality Kerr Lakeside 70th anniversary commemorative baseball.
Oh, you saw that. You saw that. Oh, excellent.
I don't miss anything with you.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, it's a good looking hat. And not only that, but it's a very, very good fishing hat. And I wear it a lot. So I was really pleased to run into you. Are you moonlighting there, though? I mean, what's going on? What were you doing there, Joe?
Sneaking a look at some of the machinery.
I can't tell a lie. I signed up for the tour. And then subsequent to that, I got invited to join my son in Chicago. So I basically came and shook hands with all the people. And as the tour group started forming up, I, hit the road. I've been through the auto boat plant two or three times, so it wasn't like I didn't appreciate their hospitality. I think that touring anybody's facility, whether it's a manufacturing facility like theirs or ours, a heat treat plant or a plating shop, it just, they say a picture's worth a thousand words. I think a plant tour is worth a 5-day seminar in some cases. And there's no such thing as knowing too much about all the different processes in our industry.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, and actually my first experience was at two or three York plant actually a couple of years ago. They just had more, they were doing different stuff actually.
Yeah, you put on a great show too, and you're very generous with your hospitality. We've discussed that before on the podcast for sure. Well, lots of questions we can talk about, but put it this way. Anytime we invite you on the podcast and you grace us with your presence, the ratings go way up. So, the fastener industry needs to hear the voice of Charlie Kerr. We got a few questions for you. So thanks for coming on.
I'm not happy to have you. How long ago was the last time you had me? It seems like it was a short time ago.
Well, we did that little blurb when we were doing the plant tour with the Training Institute, but a proper segment, it's been a few months, okay, Charlie.
Time flies.
Yeah, when you're having fun. Yeah, I know.
So I'll tell you, one of the other reasons that I was thinking about you, actually, is because I had kind of I thought it was an interesting experience this week. I was helping a consulting company who's researching the fastener industry, and I was giving them the lay of the land in terms of the master distribution model in our industry and the state of it and how it works and all that. And I started thinking about my visit to Autobolt and to your facility, other manufacturers, and I started wondering about the way that you guys sell into the market. Now, I guess we have a bunch of questions on that. How do you sell into the market and do you sell into different markets in different ways? But you are at the Vegas show and at Fastener Tech, and I guess now probably you'll be out there in Detroit at Fastener Fair, but do you do a lot of other trade shows too that are industry specific?
No, the only show that we regularly exhibit at is the Vegas show. And the Fastener Fair, we walked the Cleveland show, and after walking it, realized that this was when they brought the show to Detroit for 2019. That it was something that we needed to have a booth at. Basically, we sell a lot of stuff in Michigan, so we'd be conspicuous by our absence depending on which customers of ours showed up.
Sure, I got that. But are you doing any other shows that are industry specific?
Not exhibiting, no. I'm not a real big fan. I mean, I got to think I had to explain this without sounding down on these people that run the shows. But obviously, Vegas is a major event. And we would be conspicuous by our absence if we didn't exhibit there. But some of the regional shows that the more regional associations put on, it's almost like I feel we'd be going to it for the sake of going to it. And, as you get farther and farther away from Cleveland, this, saturation level, if you want to call it that, of, what we sell and who we sell it to starts to get thinner and thinner and thinner. I wouldn't exhibit at a show in California. I wouldn't exhibit at a show in Seattle. I wouldn't exhibit at a show in New York City. Not that I think I'm just throwing some cities out. It's expensive. You get the booth space, the transportation costs, the lodging, shipping the exhibit out. And now, for instance, Vegas, the show, depending on, not just the floor traffic, but, for the cocktail hours and some of the other, non-exhibit networking events, The customers we see in 2 or 3 days would probably take 6 months if all you did was drive around to call on these people. So
yeah,
there has to be a reasonable expectation that a significant part of our customer base is going to be represented in the floor traffic. And if the answer, if we ask the question internally, is there going to be a lot of people in our customer base, and the answer is not really, then we won't go.
Well, yeah, that's just good business, though. That's just good business. So that makes total sense. And like for us, it's stupid for us not to be at these shows because the majority of the people in the aisles are people we need to be aware of what we do. But that's really not the main question going to shows, you know? I mean, the main question is the way manufacturers like Kerr Lakeside and Autobolt and others are selling into the markets where fasteners are used, right? Because you go to any of these shows and there's lots of major manufacturers you never see at a show. So I guess the main question is, how are you getting to market?
Well, we sell our standard socket screws through distribution. We will not knowingly sell an end user direct. And it's, you know, it's a little easier to figure this stuff out. You know, back in the old days, someone would say, yeah, I'm a distributor, you know, located in some obscure city in Colorado. You took their word for it. So we sell our standard sockets through distribution. Now, you used the term earlier in a discussion, master distributor. I'm not really sure, you know, we sell to people that sell them, you know, advertise themselves as master distributors. And we also sell to people that are just what I'll call regular fastener houses. But we don't have a master distributor, except there's one exception. There's a outfit up in Canada that is our master distributor in Canada. And because it's cross-border, it makes sense to do it like that. We've never given anybody an exclusive distribution, like this is your territory and only you will distribute for us in this part of the country. We've never done that. And quite frankly, I don't see any circumstances in the foreseeable future where we would seriously entertain doing that. I mean, you know, if I can expand on one thing, over the years, there were a couple of socket screw manufacturers that I'm not going to name, just, you know, because when you name other people, sometimes if you're a little bit wrong, you can start arguments you don't intend to.
Yeah, don't do that.
There was a couple domestic manufacturers that did have master distributors. So if you were, say, a small 2 or 3 person operation and you had end users that wanted to, you know, buy, you know, that particular name brand, your distributor had to go to the master distributor who got the stuff from the manufacturer. And I think one of the differences is if you're going to use master distributors, they got to commit to some mammoth inventory levels. And very few people, and because you start thinking about it, if you're going to be a master distributor, you're going to do sockets, you're going to do hex heads, you're going to do nuts, 12 points. You could have a couple $1 million tied up in inventory. Well, because we sell to distributors without the master distributor necessarily getting in the middle, we carry the inventory. And at any given time, we probably have, you know, put this in, you know, take the dollar value out of it. If you weighed every part we got in the rack, we got between 3.5 and 4 million pounds of screws ready to ship the day of their order. And, you know, that's how we go to market. Give us an order. Unless it's 50 line items long, we'll ship it the day you order it. And our inventory service level right now is about 98%. And, you know, I know that it's kind of like we're doing a master distributor function in some ways, but it's working for us.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see racks and racks of fasteners there in your facility when we visited. And you're obviously doing it that way. Do you think that's typical? I mean, are there guys in the industry who do what you do that are operating the same way? Is that kind of common?
I'm not sure. I was, once again, I'm going to be, you know, vague about naming people. But, you know, over the years, I've gotten to know some people that work for, and I'm talking domestic competition primarily. And we're talking, and I said, yeah, you know, we ship, you know, we try to ship 97, 98% of our catalog, you know, from stock. And they looked at me like, are you nuts? You must have inventory all over the place. I said, we do. And so anyhow, 15 years later, I run into this fellow that I'm thinking of at the assembly show in Chicago, and we start talking about that. He said, everybody thought you guys were crazy for carrying all that inventory. He said, that's why you've moved into market position that you occupy now, because you recognized the other domestic socket manufacturers weren't doing it. And it wasn't a strategy necessarily based on just in time or anything like that. It was, my father had a very simple philosophy. If you take a shopping cart into a grocery store, you're not going to buy what's not on the shelf. And even though we're not in the grocery business, he felt that if people had a list of items they needed to buy, and there were a number of them that we habitually couldn't ship, they would probably move all the business somewhere else. So he wanted to be that grocery store that had everything on your shopping list. Now, you know, there's no secrets in this business. You saw the inventory we carry. We probably turn our inventory once every 8 or 9 months. Turn a place over to a CPA for 6 months, and they'll say you should be turning the inventory 3 times a day. That would put us out of business. We're not afraid to carry inventory, even though the textbooks say it's a bad idea to do it.
So you need to change your textbooks then. Clearly it has worked for you, so it can't be a bad idea. But it's an interesting difference. I mean, I guess it's all sorts of things are different. If you were one of the like the giant manufacturers, then they couldn't afford to do that. I mean, one of the big ones, Infasco or something? I mean, if they were carrying 9 months, it would be millions and millions of dollars.
Well, see, we run families of parts. So when we're running quarter-inch socket screws, we're going to run all the different lengths, short to long, in coarse thread. And then we change over to fine thread and run all the longer lengths, work back to the shorter lengths. And that could, in some cases, be a run of over 3 million pieces. But I'm trying to think how to say this without getting too deep in the weeds. The machine's not making any money for us when we're setting it up. So you combine these families to avoid setups. But, you know, we might be on that diameter for, a total of 200 production hours. And depending on whether the machine's running two shifts or one shift, it could be, 3 weeks, or maybe up to 6 weeks. But as far as back to the original question, I don't anticipate any changes in the way we go to market. We're certainly not, contemplating any changes. We have a very large number of distributors that, with the exception of, say, maybe 15, don't buy huge amounts of parts from us, but we still are very grateful for their business because collectively they're probably, 75 to 80% of our sales. And I wouldn't want to get into a situation. In fact, I got approached by somebody once that is a master distributor, and they wanted to buy all of our screws from us and be our master distributor. And it's like, we're going to basically put our viability into the hands of one company that has, say, 4 or 5 key people involved in their marketing. There's no way I would do that.
Right. Well, you got to be careful with all those exclusivity arrangements.
Yeah, you let someone else control your destiny. Now, one thing, if I could segue into one thing, because this ties into what we're talking about. I went to a presentation at John Carroll University a couple months ago, and the person speaking, it was a woman named Laura Sheridan. She said something that, at first I thought, I'm wasting my time being at this meeting because it sounded so inconsistent with what I've always thought and believed. But after she started working her way through the presentation, it made sense. And I now buy into this idea. And what she said was, what your customers buy from you is not what you sell. And if you think about that, okay, I have distributors that buy socket head cap screws. They give me a purchase order. I give them a shipment with a packing slip and an invoice. But at the end of the day, that's not what we sell. Kerr Lakeside sells machine time. That's, I mentioned a little while ago, I'm not making any money when the machine's in setup. And this is an important concept because right now, and hopefully it'll stay this way for a while, machine time is in greater demand than there's a supply of. And that goes into the labor force issues as well. There's a shortage of machine operators, which means there's a shortage of production times. And we've had a couple of customers for make-to-print parts come to us and say, hey, I need you to cut the price. I said, no, not happening. The demand for my machine time is such that I don't have to cut the price on anything. And I know it's hard to do, but when you think in terms of what you sell is not what your customers are buying, and you can differentiate between what's in the box that they buy versus what is it that you sell, it gives you a whole different perspective about, you know, going to market and, you know, pricing strategies. Like right now, we're not thinking about anything drastic. We're going to stay in the socket screw business. There are some make-to-print parts that I might want to not do a hard exit. Like I'm not running these anymore. But like I said, we had a couple people say, hey, you know, I need, you know, you to cut the price, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, it didn't make sense.
Yeah, I could see how you might want to think about your business as the machine time versus the actual product. But I mean, at a certain point, to me, it kind of sounds like management consultant bullshit. I mean, the people are buying the stuff that comes in little boxes and goes in things ultimately. And I mean, you have to look at it that way at a certain point, but you know, I don't know what the benefit of looking at it that way is.
Well, like I said, when she first said this, I was like, this sounds a little off. I sat there.
I sat there
for an hour. And obviously, we're not going to take up much time getting into, you know, some of the concepts on that. But the point that I wanted to make is that if you've got $1 million piece of equipment and you're making nails that can be imported from China for less than your raw material costs, you need to look at, am I in the nail business or am I in the manufacturing business? And, you know, I just thought I'd throw that out there because it doesn't change the way we're going to do things in a, you know, it's not like a paradigm shift or anything like that. But there is some business that we've had over the years that sometimes I wonder if we're really making any money running it, but it's legacy business. After listening to the what I sell isn't what they buy, if I don't think I'm making money, I'm going to raise the price to the point where I think I am. And if I lose the business, in fact, I'll tell you, you know, a quickie here. Our fiscal year ended on October 31st, and we had our net profit as a percentage of gross sales was a record. And there was some business that we didn't do a lot of during that year. And that tells me what my gut feeling is. It's not profitable work. We look, you know, we've got sales codes for different types of product, and some of the sales codes for this marginal business had small numbers next to them. I don't think it's a coincidence that we had a really good P&L when these sales codes that I've been suspicious about had small numbers attached to them.
Right. No contribution to profit.
I mean, when the machine is sitting there with no work, like it was back in 2008, you take what you can get because some machine time that you sell is better than no machine time, unless you're selling it at, you know, a substantial loss. So, I mean, it's a seller's market right now for certain items. I don't think people should get greedy or stupid, but I also don't think people should be reluctant to say, hey, look, I'm worth more than I've been selling my stuff for the last 4 or 5 years. It's basically what the steel companies did when these tariffs went in. They said, look, you know, we can get more money for our stuff. Market forces are at work.
Yep, that's right. And that's just ordinary business logic, though, isn't it? Common sense. One question I want to ask you, Charlie. When we on our tour of Autobolt, which was very well done, and we saw lots of machinery, I was really amazed by the amount of metric specification bolts that were being made. I was sort of, I guess I just didn't really conceive of the fact that, you know, my thinking is, oh, well, these are made overseas. And then I saw bin after bin of metric carriage bolts and all sorts of things. I mean, really a lot of stuff. I was just amazed by it. I mean, is that a substantial part of your business?
I can't specifically comment to, you know, the parts Autobolt makes because I'm not familiar with, you know, who they're specifically making them for. We do a fair amount of standards and metrics, but it's still a relatively small piece of our sales pie. But Autobolt, I'm guessing, makes more make-to-print parts, you know, that are, you know, like application-specific. If you're making a device, whether it's a machine tool, an automobile, a photocopier, and you want to sell that all over the world, it's going to have metric screw threads in the fasteners.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, it's the inch series or fractional series, you know, as some people call it. We still sell a lot of that. And actually, if you'd asked me 25 or 30 years ago, I'd have thought that the market would have shifted to the point where inch series socket screws would have gone the same way as the 36 series, you know, almost non-existent, but they're still holding a place in the market. But if you're doing special make to print, in fact, I can tell you, just, you know, running a couple of items through my head right now, some of the special make to print fasteners that we do make, I think most of them have metric threads on them anymore. And I'm not talking about, you know, special in like the thread length is a little different. I'm talking about like things that are like not even socket screws, like 12-point flange bolts, things like that. That's all metric threads now. So I'm not surprised that if you would, you know, tour other factories in addition to AutoBolt, unless they're making consensus standard parts like to, you know, SAE, J429 grade 8 hex heads or ASTM A574, you know, socket product, you're going to see a lot of metrics. I think as time goes by, it's going to become even more prevalent.
It's a good comment. I was just sort of amazed. I'm not amazed. I'm glad. It's very, very good to see. I just was sort of surprised to find things that I would have thought really were manufactured in Taiwan or China that actually were being made in factories in Cleveland, which it surprised me. I'm sort of glad about it.
Well, it's not, like I said earlier, it's not the fastener itself that drives the thread style. It's the, you know, end use. And like, for example, I'm just bringing this up because while I was waiting for you guys to get me on the show here, I was doing my spring tune-up on my Trek 730 21-speed bicycle.
Nice.
That's got 25 socket head cap screws on it. That's why I bought the bike, by the way. They're all metrics. And the reason for that is while Trek is an American bike manufacturer, they sell their bikes all over the world. They would have a hard time selling their bicycles in Europe or Asia if they had inch series socket head cap screws on them.
Except that then everyone would have to take them back to the dealer to get them repaired, which is a lot of the logic used with some of the machinery coming out of China, which has British standard Whitworth threads on it.
Well, that's a term I haven't heard in forever.
Yeah, Brian loves it.
Or BSF, British standard fine. Okay. Things that I grew up with.
Well, listen, Charlie, so getting back to my original question to you, from your perspective, doesn't sound like there's too much that's influencing master distribution, again, from your perspective, but is there anything on the horizon for the fastener industry that you see that's out there that's really going to make an impact, perhaps that isn't beaten to death already conversationally? What's out there awaiting us?
Well, yes, and, you know, to kind of, you know, dovetail this into the distribution, the answer to your question is blockchain. And once again, you know, I went to a presentation that was put on by a gentleman named Shane Bigelow. If you're from the Cleveland area, the name Bigelow is known because Bigelow is a family that's owned car dealerships. And the car dealerships in the Cleveland area are really big in the blockchain. And they put this presentation on. And the analogy that I would use as to why people in our industry need to know more about this, it might not directly affect the way you do business, but if it does, and you find out about it after the horse is out of the barn, you're going to be in a bad way. And this is comparable to a North Coast Fastener Association event that I went to probably in the late 1990s. Ken Graham, who was president of the association at the time, brought in someone to talk about this really bizarre concept. It was called search engines.
Wow.
Now, I'd heard of Google and Yahoo and AOL, but I didn't know, you know, the search engine function. And as the presentation started, I thought, well, I know how to do that. I can type in, like, you know, someone's address or whatever. But that wasn't the key thing. The key thing was, how do you get people looking for, you know, product that you have available? If they type in, you know, grade 8 hex heads or socket head cap screws, for the name of your company to come up. And it's sort of like, it never would have dawned on me that someone could, you know about my company because they typed in, you know, fasteners or dowel pins or something like that into the search engine. You know, to me, this was like a toy. So I walked out of there realizing that this has a very real application to our business and a very real negative potential if we don't understand how it works and how to make it work for us. I think today, say 20 some odd years later, maybe even longer, this meeting Ken put on could have even been more like 1993 or 1994, now that I think about it. Blockchain is going to be, for some industries, like the internet was back in the early 90s going forward, for Amazon wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the internet.
Okay, hang on, because I know Brian's going to want to jump in on this, but just in one or two sentences, what is it going to do for the industry that's going to make that so?
Let me tell you what this guy said, and this is why I think this is something Fastener people need to know about. He said, the big advantage of blockchain is it eliminates the middleman. Now, in this industry, I'm a manufacturer. Who's the middleman in the fastener business?
Well, to you, it would be distributors, I guess.
Exactly. And if blockchain can be applied in our industry and really eliminate the middleman, I mean, there's always going to be distributors. There's going to be a lot of people that could put out of business because they're not aware of this particular methodology. Now, it might not, apply to our industry. I'm not an expert on this, and I'm not going to try to represent myself. But I really think anybody that doesn't take the time to educate themselves on what this is and how it works, and then make some decisions about how it could be applicable to their, business model, they're setting themselves up for a really, really bad disaster.
Okay, now I'm going to make my comment. I think I'm not sure about the comment of it getting rid of the middleman. It just means that the middleman can be an integral part of the whole transaction, because I never thought of it as a way of getting rid of the distributors, but I thought of it as a way of allowing distributors to make the knowledge about the product available to all stages of the supply process, which is where blockchain has its forte. In other words, it's basically meant to be this giant, shared database that sits somewhere in the cloud or whenever, that each person in a stage of the process, it could be from when a person calls a distributor to order a delivery of some bolts to when those bolts are being packed into a case. And that information usually sits in the distributor's computer system. Then it gets picked up by some shipping company. Then it goes into another computer system. But in blockchain, that stays in the chain. And that chain could be run by IBM. I mean, IBM's released an IBM blockchain, which is in cloud service, probably worth looking at very, 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 very carefully. And so people in the chain itself can see where this box of bolts is, because they don't have to be able to get into your computer system or the distributor's computer system or the shipping company's computer system to find that out. That's all in a ledger that can only be affected by certain people at certain stages.
Well, see, one thing that I mentioned, the fellow that put this presentation on, his family is, in the car dealer business. He used an example of why when you buy a car, it takes almost a month to get the title or memorandum of title.
Yeah.
Because 7 or 8 different people, government agencies, banks, car dealership, they get their fingerprints on this transaction. He said blockchain, when it's fully integrated into, that particular industry, you'll have your car title the day after you drive the car home. That's how streamlined that process is going to become. So once again, I'm not an advocate for this. I just think that if this is a game-changing technology, the people that are last to find out about it are probably going to be seriously disadvantaged because of that.
Well, they'll be less competitive than the people who have embraced it. But it requires the demand. It's going to take a while to get through into this industry especially. But it can provide great visibility into the process of materials handling throughout all the stages of it. I think it's very, very important.
I mean, that was some of the stuff that the speaker touched on. You mentioned visibility, you know, real-time data. And he's, you know, didn't get real specific, but he insinuated that this is not very costly, that it's going to be affordable for even small enterprises to, you know, participate in. Now, obviously, it's in its developmental stages right now. And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, I want to do blockchain. If everybody that I do business with from suppliers and customers isn't involved, there's nothing for me to do. So I'm at a little bit of a loss as to how this actually gets integrated, you know, based on some of the different, you know, players that would be involved.
Well, let's just say it this way. You've got your marker down. The Kerr Lakeside has got its eye on blockchain. And I think you're right. At a certain point, there's going to be some application in the fastener industry that's going to make an impact. I think we could probably all agree on that. You were talking earlier, while we were speaking about machine time and all that, about labor issues, and that's a recurrent theme that you're dealing with. So is there anything current now that you're working with or that you're noticing? Any trends that are changing, or is it pretty much same old in that area?
Well, it's, you know, I mentioned, you know, it's a seller's market. If you're a skilled machine operator, you're in a seller's market. You can sell your skills. There's, you know, wage pressure. You know, we compete, you know, for customers in this industry. Right now, I think the competition for help of the skilled nature is even more intense. Now, a couple things I'll tell you, you know, Kerr Lakeside, because we do, you know, have a lot of inventory. We got a, you know, large warehouse staff, and they're not our, you know, highest paid people. They're not making minimum wage by any, you know, stretch of the imagination. But Amazon opened like a 1 million square foot warehouse, literally walking distance from our plant, that was going to employ 1,000 people. I saw that as a direct threat. Aldi, you know, the discount supermarket chain, yeah, they're sending postcards out. Hey, come work on our warehouse, you know, $17 an hour, all this paid time off. So people are getting very aggressive for what I'll call entry-level help, or, you know, help that's closer, you know, to entry-level than it would be for, you know, like a skill that would take several years to learn. So here's something that really knocked me out of my chair when I heard this. I went to an annual economic presentation that was put on by Fifth Third Bank. That's our bank. And they typically talk about, you know, all the stuff you'd expect a bank to talk about. Interest rates, you know, investment markets, you know, bonds, you know, other equities. The speaker did probably 2 minutes talking about that. And he spent the rest of his hour to hour and 15 minutes talking about labor force issues. And he first got into, you know, defining the difference between the unemployment rate and workforce participation, which led into the meat and potatoes of his talk. Now, keep in mind, this is not an economist with Fifth Third Bank. It is the economist. He's their head guy. He said, if you have a hard time hiring people, there's an untapped market out there that's got about 15 million people in it. And they're not all employable, but many of them are. They're people with criminal records. Now, keep in mind, this guy's with the bank. You know, the last thing I expected a ranking official with any bank to tell me is people that serve time in prison or were lucky enough to avoid prison but were on probation or something like that. If you've got empty jobs and you've never considered these people, now's the time to do it. You start ticking off some of the reasons for it. They're under control of some sort or supervision. They got a parole officer, a probation officer. They have to have a job as a condition of them not being locked up. They have to regularly be drug tested. They got to stay out of trouble. They got to do a lot of things you as an employer could never impose upon your workforce. But it is imposed upon them by the Department of Corrections or the parole board or the probation officer or whatever. Now, there is a downside to this. You can't just hire anybody with a criminal record, because depending on what their criminal history is, like let's say you're a bank and the person went to jail for embezzling money from a previous employer, probably not a good idea. But if, you know, say the person, you know, was a, you know, street level marijuana dealer, and not that that makes them, you know, a model citizen, but it's possible if they spent a little bit of time behind bars, they might think an honest living is the way to go. So I found that to be, you know, I mean, I've had people suggest to me to consider people that have a criminal history as possible employees. It never dawned on me that our bank would say, your key to growth is to be able to hire people to make your business run. We're going to tell you about this market. It could be about 15 million people. And the last thing to go along with that, right. You just don't hire someone off the street like that. There's organizations like the Salvation Army that run these people through a qualification program. So if you do hire them, they've been screened and tested. You know, I mean, you kind of get where, you know, they've been qualified. So the risk is there, but it's not like you're hiring the people the day they walk out of the Sally Port at the state pen.
Right, right.
It's an interesting idea.
Right. Yeah. I would have been surprised too had I walked into a bank meeting and had that advice. But, you know, it makes sense. And I have to say it this way. I support the idea behind helping people along, especially people who have made mistakes and so forth. I think it's a good idea. You know, I'm smelling here a business opportunity, though. Maybe there's a specialty HR type of a business that could develop out of something like that, because it does sound like kind of a specialized area.
Well, there's another, you know, it's got nothing to do with ex-cons, but there's on the front page of the local newspaper here, one of the temporary staffing agencies that we use sent some of their people to Puerto Rico, scoured the countryside, so to speak, rounded up about 100 people that they thought they could place and brought them to the United States. Or not, I mean, they're in the United States. They brought them to the mainland. Because, you know, that hurricane, you know, even though it's been over a year, year and a half already, half the island is out of work. So whether it's an ex-con or someone in a devastated piece of geography, there are some people out there that are coming up with some what I'll call very out-of-the-box ideas that we can benefit from. I think the good news is you mentioned business opportunity. There are entrepreneurs out there that are looking for ways to help solve this problem, not just for us in the fastener industry, but anybody that employs people, regardless of the industry you're in.
Well, there's an added bonus from episode 138. People have a new thing to consider in terms of...
Right. The labor pool just got a bit wider.
Yeah, deviating from the normal fastener fare.
You know, one thing, just as a side note, though, and this is probably 25 or 30 years ago, when Umbreco was owned and operated by SBS Technologies, they had a plant in Puerto Rico. You know, so there could be some people on the island that have marketable manufacturing-related skills, because there is some industry down there. Not like you'd find in a city like Chicago or Cleveland or Detroit, but there could be, you know, I'm not hopping on an airplane to San Juan looking for a header operator tomorrow, but this is something I never would have considered.
Well, we have some friends down in Puerto Rico, some listeners down there, and there's hardworking people, yeah. Hardworking fastener people down there. But Well, Charlie, we're going to wind this up. But before we let you go, I can't not ask you about your take on the Indians' chances this year. Do you have anything that you want to put out there, put a marker down for the 2019 season?
Well, I'm comfortable predicting they will win the division. I think they'll win 92 or 93 ball games. The Royals, the Tigers, and the White Sox, I just don't think have enough pitching or other, you know, offense to challenge the Indians for the division. The Twins, they're a maybe. They've improved. They added Nelson Cruz, which is a good, you know, acquisition for them. But the bottom line is the Cleveland Indians have the best starting rotation in all of Major League Baseball. That's going to keep them competitive. Now, if they win the division, what happens in the postseason is anybody's guess. I'm kind of resigned to if they don't win the World Series in 2019 or 2020, I might not live long enough to see them win it ever. I'm 63. And if they don't do it in the next year or two, they're probably going to go into a total rebuild mode. And for a market, you know, the size of Cleveland, that could be, you know, 8 to 10 year undertaking.
You see that talent pool waning a little bit, huh? Well, I tell you what, I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch of the Cubs and the Indians. Of course, you know where my heart lies in that one, but hopefully we get an opportunity, Charlie, this summer to head out to the ballpark, maybe with the NCFA, split a bag of peanuts and discuss it further.
Well, you mentioned the NCFA. That's the social, it's a tribe game that's against the New York Yankees. And if I could plug that is 18th of July, 7 o'clock Thursday against the New York Yankees. Oh, another mistake. The Tigers. You're going to have to ban me from the show if I keep this up.
That's what the edit button's for, okay?
Yeah, okay, here's the deal. It's a 7 o'clock game on Thursday, the 18th of July, against the Detroit Tigers.
We're there.
Well, I'll be there.
Well, you never miss the NCFA night at the ball game, that's for sure. So
it's a good networking event.
Well, you'll be there. Yeah, you have to get a break in all these seminars that you attend. I mean, you're at ball games, you're at all these seminars, you're opening the door for Auto Bolt. You never know where Charlie Kerr will wind up, but we're glad that you wound up on Fully Threaded Radio this time around. Thanks again for joining us.
You never asked me why I was in such a hurry to get to Chicago.
Okay, go ahead.
I had fifth row seats to see Kiss at the United Center.
And you bring this up now? Oh, my God. So yeah. Were they in full regalia?
Oh, yeah. It was that's another show for you. It's like, you know, they put on a show to give you your money's worth for the tickets. And I liked it so much, I'm going to be seeing them this Wednesday night in Detroit.
You're amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Charlie Kerr with Kerr Lakeside. They are precision machine products manufacturers. They've been around for years and years, 70th, actually, anniversary they just had. And get out there to kerrlakeside.com for more information, or maybe you want to reach out to Charlie. Hey, thanks again for coming on again.
My pleasure. I look forward to the next time you put me on the air with you.
We do too.
It's Fully Threaded.
At Brighton Best, we continue to expand our wide range of products, including stainless steel and metric fasteners. Our family of brands include Preferred, US Anchor, and Ironclad Performance Wear. BBI has been a trusted partner since 1925. With award-winning hand tools, gloves, and drywall screws, BBI is the largest master distributor of fasteners in the USA. Tested, tried, and true. We are Brighton Best. To learn more about Brighton Best, visit brightonbest.com.
BTM Manufacturing is a domestic ISO 9001 manufacturer of threaded fasteners and bent wire products. From anchor bolts to studs to U-bolts, BTM is committed to making your per-print special with the highest quality standards while meeting your on-time delivery schedule. Since BTM began in 1961, this family-owned business has remained focused on providing exceptional service to their customers. Centrally located in Kansas City, Missouri, BTM recently expanded into a 100,000-square-foot facility, which allows for the production and manufacture of many projects simultaneously, both large and small quantity. BTM's website at btm-mfg.com allows you to submit custom quotes quickly and easily, and once you do, a BTM team member will contact you as soon as possible to discuss your needs. Are you ready to get started? BTM is. Visit www.btm-mfg.com today.
Buckeye Fasteners and the Ohio Nut and Bolt Company have been servicing the fastener community since 1905. An employee-owned company for 33 years, we take great pride in the quality of products we sell, offering outstanding customer service from our very knowledgeable sales team members. Our standard product lines include graded weld screws, resistance weld fasteners, leg levelers, tube inserts, clevis pins, and various other fasteners. We have complete custom manufacturing capabilities in low carbon, medium carbon, and stainless steel materials, and our quality systems are registered to ISO standards. We also have an entire team of sourcing specialists able to locate those hard to find items with typically smaller minimums and shorter lead times than that of our competition. We offer same day shipments from one of our warehouses, strategically located throughout the United States and Canada, enabling us to fulfill all your fastener needs in a very timely manner. To find out more about Buckeye Fasteners, please call us at 800-437-1689 or visit us on the web at buckeyefasteners.com. Buckeye Fasteners, product support from development to implementation.
In this economy, I need to cut cost in freight or I'll lose my customer.
Solution Man Ken. The more you order, the more you'll save. With free freight on orders over $1,000. See the Solution Industries website for details at solutionind.com.
Solution Man, you're my fastener hero.
Just doing my job, ma'am.
S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N.
Solution Industries, we are Solution.
Hi, this is Rich Cavuto with Metric and Multistandard, and you're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Brian and Eric, back with you. Well, Bri, after talking with Charlie Kerr, it almost seems like we should be winding up the show, doesn't it?
Yeah, actually. But we still have to deal with the whole issue of employment, and we'll get back to that later, I think. Another episode, I think.
Yeah, well, my point was you always get more than you bargained for when you get Charlie on, and it was really cool. I mean, it's another double feature episode, I guess, is what I'm getting to.
Right.
But now we're at the long-awaited news portion of the podcast, everybody. Thanks for clicking into Fully Threaded Radio. Hey, everybody, it's springtime, and that means that all kinds of good things are happening in the fastener golf world, and we want to let you know that coming up May 10th, the PacWest is once again sponsoring the 2019 Mel Kirshner Memorial Golf Outing. That's happening out there at Westridge Golf Club, and that's in La Habra, California. Details are available at the PacWest website, pac-west.org. It's a good cause. It's a lot of fun. Who knows? Maybe you'll be able to beat Team in Sequel this year.
Good luck with that.
Could happen. Not likely, though. Although I'm sure they have a good second place prize, Bri.
Okay.
Of course, the Pacific Warehouse sales girls are always right there, too. So I guess it is a contest. Now, if you are heading out to this event, everybody, the PacWest is asking that you please wear a Hawaiian shirt. Because, of course, Mel was a huge Hawaiian shirt fan, and that ought to be really funny, seeing everybody out there playing golf wearing Hawaiian shirts and all part of the fun. Yeah, guess that means you won't be attending, Bri. I don't think I've ever seen you wear a Hawaiian shirt.
No, I might have had one once about 40 or 50 years ago in New Zealand, but it's not something you sort of wear in Chicago that much.
No, and that's the only reason you won't be attending, right?
Right, yeah.
Otherwise, you'd be there. Well, I know where you will be heading, Bri, and that is Fastener Tech 19, because that's happening right in your backyard, and it's a great show. Is that true or not?
That is true. Yep.
Good, because I'm planning on shipping the booth out there right after Fastener Fair, but more to the point, Fastener Tech's happening, and fortunately for us, we have someone who knows a whole lot about that. Paul Evitz has been a member of the MWFA board for as long as I've been associated with that particular fine association, and she's working on Fastener Tech 19. She joins us now. Paula, thank you for hopping in with us.
Ooh, thanks for having me.
It's all right.
You guys have been super busy on Fastener Tech. Tell us all about it. What's going on?
Yeah, it's going to be this year, June 4th and 5th. But we have events starting on the 3rd and the 6th as well. So we're excited about this year's show. We have a lot of new things coming up, but explain that in a minute.
Now, what organizations are supporting the show this year, Paula?
Well, we're excited to partner once again with Fastener Technologies International. And we welcome International Fastener Expo as a partner this year as well.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also want to mention, too, that we're co-located with the Surfin people, which are, they bring in a great show, so we're expecting a lot of cross-traffic as well.
There were a lot of Surfin people walking the aisles last time they co-located. I think that added a lot to the show.
Yeah. Yep.
Details for all of this, folks, are available at either the website fastenertech.com or mwfa.net.
So tell us why anyone should really want to go to Fastener Tech. I mean, we know the answer, but you've got to tell other people.
Sure, sure. You know, we've always promoted that our show's in the industry and it's for the industry. And you know, we're very proud of the fact that proceeds from our show are put back into the industry through educational programs that are offered by the MWFA. Another thing is we make our sign-up process real simple. You know, we offer a complete booth package and, you know, streamline the process to make it really easy to sign up for our show.
So what new things are you adding this year? I mean, there's always something new, and we all know it's a great show because we've been going there for years. But what are you doing this year that's different?
So this year we have a new product showcase, which is going to give exhibitors the opportunity, you know, to show off new things that they're offering. That'll be at the entryway of the show. We also have added a keynote speaker. And lastly, we've had, in addition to our all-industry reception, we've added an after-party after the second day of the show.
Okay. So now who's the keynote speaker? Tell us.
So we have Bill Strauss from the Federal Reserve.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a fantastic speaker.
Yes. Eric and I have both heard him a couple of times, actually. And we've interviewed him on the show a long time ago.
Okay.
Yeah, he was an FTR guest at one point.
Right. Oh, he's a great speaker. If you want to know anything about the workings of the Federal Reserve and where they think the economy's going, he's a great fountain of knowledge.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's cool. Very interesting to listen to, and he brings a wealth of knowledge.
Once again, Paula, what are the dates for Fastener Tech 19?
All right. So it is June 4th and 5th, and then we have move-in and on the 3rd, and Fastener Training Institute will be starting off our seminars on that Monday with Why Fasteners Fail. And then so the show will be Tuesday and Wednesday. And then Thursday we will have our annual golf outing, which has always been well attended.
Very well attended, except by me, who doesn't pretend even to play golf, okay? But I know lots and lots and lots of other people do.
Yes.
Right, Hawaiian shirt or not. Once again, yeah, everyone, right. This event is happening in Rosemont, Illinois, which is basically Chicago, right near O'Hare Airport. So it's convenient to get to. It's at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center, and that's a very, very great place to be.
Tons of parking just over the road. Easier to get to from 294 or, you know, the road that comes from the airport, if you don't know that.
And lots of great opportunities for after-hours entertainment. I mean, it's really a pretty world-class kind of a place.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this after-party, though. You kind of skated right over that, Paul. And as you know, Fully Threaded listeners are, you know, their ears perked up when you mentioned that.
For sure. No, it's, you know, we're all about providing as many network opportunities and making it a more personal experience. And that's why we decided to add, you know, the after party, you know, an opportunity for people who have just, you know, met others to sit and, you know, engage in longer conversations and, you know, just have the opportunity to talk more.
So where is this event?
We have it shown at the exhibit hall. So I believe it's just outside the show.
Okay, just outside the entry, right.
Fastener Tech 19. It's a biennial event, everybody. So, or do you say biannual, but mean the same thing?
Whatever works.
Well, listen, before we cut to the next kind of portion of the conversation, we should probably put it out there. I mean, you folks have been working very hard. You've been putting the show together. It's by the industry, for the industry. But there's a lot of competition out there for trade show attention these days. So how are you approaching that? I mean, what are the reactions of the show organizers to all of this competition these days?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we're aware, obviously, that there's a lot of other shows out there. But we really try to make it a unique experience by, you know, going back to making it more personal. You know, while technology has been fantastic in a lot of ways, you know, I feel like a lot of people have lost touch, you know, with being able to see people face to face. And, you know, just having more opportunities to network with others is has always been important.
Well, Fastener Tech has always been a super networking show. That's the, It's a very tight sort of community within the Midwest, I guess, and that it's a place where everyone sees all their friends and competitors, but their competitors are still their friends.
Get out to fastenertech.com, get yourself signed up. I'm sure there's still a few booth spaces open, so if you're late to the game, don't worry. Give Nancy Rich a call over there, and she'll find you a good spot. Who knows? Maybe you'll even be next to the FCH Sourcing Network, and boy, wouldn't that be great.
Yeah, you'd be very lucky.
We always have fun with our neighbors at these shows.
Yeah.
Paula, listen, I saw on LinkedIn something fly by that maybe you can help us to understand. You have a new gig going. What's going on with you?
I do. I'm excited to have had the opportunity to start my own company. So we started that this year, and I'm looking forward to putting almost my 25 years of experience to good use, in importing and, just partnering with our customers and helping them to grow their businesses.
And what are you calling this new enterprise?
So my new company is called Avante Imports.
Avante?
Mm-hmm. So Avante means to move forward in Italian.
Yeah.
So got to use my Italian roots there a little bit. So
that's good.
Yeah. So we've been off to a good start, and so I'm excited for the year.
Good.
And what types of customers are you hoping to attract?
So we sell only to distributors and manufacturers. We can provide a wide range of fasteners, from all the standards to a lot of specials, all different types of materials, from steels, alloys, brass, stainless. So yeah, we've got a good lineup of suppliers.
Well, congratulations on the move and good luck on that. We'll be watching, and you know where we live if you need to reach out and if we can help you.
Thanks so much.
The Fastener News Report is coming up momentarily, everybody. And of course, that's sponsored by Volt Industrial Plastics. The title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Stelfast and Brighton Best International. Well, Paul, it was great to have you jump in with us to tell us all about Fastener Tech 19. But as you know, the Fastener News Report's coming up, and we always like to invite our guests to do the honors.
Absolutely.
Please do.
All right. And now, with news about screws you can use, here's Mike McNulty.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paula. This is Mike McNulty from Fastener Technology International Magazine, bringing you the Fastener News Report, which is sponsored today by Volt Industrial Plastics, makers of the world's finest plastic fasteners. We are closing in on the return of Major League Baseball to America's great ballparks, as well as the advent of clean records on opening day, but we are also embarking on a full slate of industry events inside and outside of the USA, so I am still focused on fasteners and ready to deliver today's Fastener News Report. In this episode, Mark Strandquist of the Worth Group joins us to reveal the latest results of the Fastener Distributor Index, also known as the FDI. Also in today's broadcast, we have our top story on Arconic and newsmaker headlines from Bessard, Beacon Fastener, Jergens, Phillips Screw, SC Fastener, and Vulcan Steel, just to name a few. On the back page report, we're going to talk about the world's largest fastener show. We'll get to all of that and the latest FDI results right after this.
There's a reason Volt Industrial Plastics is an industry leader in plastic clip, clamp, and custom fastener manufacturing. With over 100 million parts in stock that can be shipped the same day, Volt has some of the fastest lead times in the industry. Volt can do color. We have the capability of molding over 120 different materials and can color match for specific applications. You need it? We can build it. At Volt, we have state-of-the-art technology to build prototypes to customer specs. And although some companies provide similar products, we offer customer service that's second to none, setting us apart from our competition. And now available, Volt's new light-duty cable clamps. With maximum diameters ranging from 3/16 to a half inch, these clamps are ideal for hard-to-reach spaces, electronics, and finish work. They prevent corrosion with metal tubing, and with plastic tubing, they won't bind or warp, preventing leaks while maintaining the flow of liquids. Volt Industrial Plastics, the finest, fastest plastic fasteners in the world. Visit us at voltplastics.com.
BTM Manufacturing is a domestic ISO 9001 manufacturer of threaded fasteners and bent wire products. From anchor bolts to studs to U-bolts, BTM is committed to making your per-print special with the highest quality standards while meeting your on-time delivery schedule. Since BTM began in 1961, this family-owned business has remained focused on providing exceptional service to their customers. Centrally located in Kansas City, Missouri, BTM recently expanded into a 100,000-square-foot facility, which allows for the production and manufacture of many projects simultaneously, both large and small quantity. BTM's website at btm-mfg.com allows you to submit custom quotes quickly and easily, and once you do, a BTM team member will contact you as soon as possible to discuss your needs. Are you ready to get started? BTM is. Visit www.btm-mfg.com today.
I need quarter 20x2 zinc-plated socket head cap screws ASAP. My customer has a line down and needs Saturday delivery. Help!
Solution Man Ken. I have over $1 million in zinc-plated sockets in stock, and I'll gladly drop ship directly to your customer on Saturdays. Visit the Solution Industries website for details at solutionind.com.
Is there anything you can't do, Solution Man?
When it comes to fasteners, nothing I can think of, ma'am. I'm not too good at bowling, though.
S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N, S-O-L-U-T-I-O-N,
Solution Industries. We are Solution.
Mike McNulty.
The seasonally adjusted FDI for February was 52.5, decelerating versus last month's 56.5 reading, and consistent with the deceleration in last month's forward-looking indicator. Fastener Distributor Index data is collected and analyzed by the FCH Sourcing Network, the National Fastener Distributors Association, and Baird. The FDI seeks to identify demand, pricing, and outlook trends within the American fastener distribution industry. To get some insights on these results, we talked to Mark Stranquist of the Worth Group. Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining us on the Fastener News Report.
Good morning.
It's good to have you back. What can you tell us about the latest FDI results, which are still in the expansion area, but dipping slightly as we head into the end of the first quarter of this year?
Yeah, not a surprise. I think, if we start first more on a global basis, we know China is slowing down and has been slowing down and actually just recast their numbers within the last week or so, predicting a much slower growth rate than what they're used to.
Right.
And then we look at just yesterday, the European Central Bank came out with an announcement that they see Europe is slowing down and there's a potential of a recession. And they're trying to find stimulus funds to put into the marketplace that are going to be able to get things going. So, and then the subset to those two areas is we know we've got these tariffs in China and our federal government is threatening to put tariffs on in Europe, especially on Germany with their cars that they export into the U.S. So between those two things, that further degrades what's going on. And then you look at the U.S., and I think we have a tenuous situation that we have had excellent economic signs for 2 years. I think we're starting to see some things that are destabilizing. I think the complete lack of effort from our federal government to deal with issues that create jobs, deal with issues that build our infrastructure. I mean, that should be a topic that everybody agrees with, and they're not dealing with it. They're dealing with, for me, non-added value issues that are not taking the company or the country forward. So, that's all going to have an impact. If the three largest economies in the world by continent are all looking into a slowdown, I think it's time, the U.S. companies need to really look at this and make some decisions in terms of looking into their business, making sure they're blocking and tackling and doing things the right way. And, there's a lot of smart people in the fastener industry, and I'm sure that people are going to start to sit there now, be a little more tentative on making decisions about expansion and growth and adding branches and adding inventory, not knowing what this next 24 months is going to show us. And we're seeing the same thing. While we have some companies that are enjoying some great sales. We had a small company within the Worth Group that in February, their sales were double the February before. But we also have some other companies where sales are stabilizing and there's no growth. So we're seeing a mix and in a variety of industries. So I do think that I felt this was a very accurate report.
Well, I mean, it's good to hear that the FDI is reflecting what's actually going out there. And, you know, business cycles do move, and you have accelerating growth and slowing growth and things like that. And I was at a economics presentation last month, and it was saying, you know, this year is a is going to be a year of slowing growth, but still in the growth phase. They're not predicting a recession. But so we're down in the – I saw the sales number was a big drop. It dropped down to 51.3 this month versus 62.2 in January. So, I mean, that's obviously one of the main reasons why the FDI aggregate indicator came down. The big news, I guess, is for the second straight month, the forward-looking indicator was below the 50-point growth mark, 49.6, just a touch lower than last month's reading of 49.8. So would you concur with that indicator as well?
I agree completely. You know, I think there's a lot, as I said earlier, there's a lot of smart people in the fastener industry. And people are looking at all these things and starting to become a little more, you know, tentative in terms of making decisions. So, and as they look to the future, like I said, I mean, a lot of it drives off of what's going on in D.C. and the non-productive, non-added value activities that are going on that have nothing to do with building our country up and creating jobs and doing the right thing, you know, and for the American people, you know, that everybody's caught up in their own private political thing. So, and I really predict if we don't get the China trade deal that we think we're going to get in the month of March, I bet you this number will go down again the next time we do the survey.
Yeah, I would expect that there's some kind of resolution with the trade thing, is my expectations. And but I agree with you, if it doesn't get resolved, it'll keep bringing things down. And you know, earlier, I think inadvertently mentioned that the government was a company, and I think that's part of the problem is that they're doing things to try to benefit the government as opposed to benefit people and industry and jobs and things like that. And as long as that's the case, I agree with you. It's a drain on the rest of us.
Yeah, it's just party politics.
Yeah, it's crazy. Somebody once said it's theater, so. Okay, the let's see, respondent comments that was notably more cautious this month, which reflects the results, and several respondents noted a softening of market conditions and things slowing down. Also, the six-month outlook is kind of tempering itself. Only 24% expect better results 6 months down the road, and 62%, the vast majority of people, think that the results will be the same as they are today 6 months down the road. So that kind of says, well, things are slowing down, but they're not expecting it to go into the negative growth territory. Do you agree with that, even though, you know, with all the slowdown, do you think we'll stay above the growth line?
I think for 2019, yes.
Mm-hmm.
What will be curious to me is the election year in 2020. You know, normally in an election year, right, the current government will do all they can to stimulate the economy so that they can go into the election
and take
be
credit
proud
for it
and brag. But I don't know if that's going to happen this time. I don't know if there's going to be that because, you know, Congress is controlled by one party. The Senate's controlled by another party. And, you know, the party that controls Congress has no interest in having any success stories that the current administration can talk about that could help them in the election. So They may actually, you know, what's always ironic to me is they're going to sit there and obfuscate and delay and everything else. And then when things do tank, they're going to blame the administration versus their activities of getting in the way. And, you know, so they're going to screw things up enough until finally it does happen. And then they'll sit there and put the blame on the current administration instead of the fact they didn't do anything for 2 years. So that to me, 2020 is going to be interesting. I think we'll have some growth. It won't be the same as the last couple of years, unless, of course, we just have some tremendous breakthroughs with this China thing, and they're going to buy $1 trillion worth of goods from our U.S. companies. I mean, obviously, that would have a tremendous positive.
Yeah, that's a wild card for
sure. Well, that's a wild card. But I think that as we move forward, 19 will still have a positive, but 2020, it's going to be really up to what the government does in preparation for the 2020 national elections. And are they really going to make an effort to make things better, or are they going to deliberately try and make things worse in order to help them win the election?
Well, separate from all that, the fastener industry is going to keep moving on. We got a lot of events coming up in the weeks and months ahead. Next up is the joint meeting in California, the NFDA, MWFA, PacWest joint meeting. Also, we have Fastener Fair USA in Detroit and the Fastener Tech in Illinois. So a lot going on. Also, international people are getting ready for Fastener Fair Stuttgart. Are you heading to any of these events?
Yeah, I'll be at the one in California next week. So looking forward to that and the joint conference. I will not be in Stuttgart, though. I don't typically go to that one because there's hundreds of worth people in Europe that go to that. And so it's kind of non-added value for me. But for sure, you know, I'm a
That's a big deal for Worth, though.
Yeah, sure it is. No, no. I mean, that's their obviously their dominant continent that they do business in is Europe. So, but no, I'm a big supporter of NFDA. It's a wonderful organization, and I think it has tons of benefits for people. And so, no, I'll be there in full-fledged support and anxious to see people.
Yeah, that joint meeting, I won't be there, but our magazines and newsletters will be there. And it looks, I looked at the attendee list and the agenda. It looks pretty good. I expect everybody going is going to have a productive and enjoyable time. All right, good. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to join us again and talk about the FDI and wish you the best of luck in the spring and out in California.
I sure appreciate it. You guys have a great day.
That was Mark Strandquist of the Worth Group and the NFDA's immediate past president. The FDI number for February was 52.5 versus 56.5 in January. Visit FDISurvey.com to participate in the process and get a detailed PDF copy of Baird's monthly analysis on the FDI. Now for today's top story. Arconic has announced a portfolio split and spinoff, as well as cost-cutting measures and potential sales of assets. In particular, Arconic aims to reduce operating costs by $200 million this year, while at the same time splitting the company into two businesses. First, engineered products and forgings, which includes fasteners, and second, global rolled products, which does not. One of these two will be spun off, and Arconic will consider the sale of other business units that do not fit into either of the two aforementioned businesses. The company has also entered into an agreement with J.P. Chase Morgan to repurchase $700 million of Arconic's common stock. Arconic's decision to separate its portfolio comes on the heels of it rejecting a $10 billion offer from a private equity firm for the entire company. Arconic Chairman and CEO John Plant said, quote, "After a rigorous and comprehensive process, we did not receive a proposal for a full company transaction that we believe was in the best interests of our shareholders. The board sees more shareholder value creation through a restructuring of the company," end quote. This whole process will take 9 to 15 months. Next up, today's Fastener Newsmaker headlines. In acquisition and expansion news, the Bessard Group is taking over German fastener supplier Bruma Schraub and Dre Technik. Distribution company Wind Supply Incorporated has opened four new companies: Wind Supply of El Paso, Wind Supply of San Antonio, Wind Supply of Frederick, Maryland, and Wind Supply of North Canton, Ohio. And Beacon Fasteners and Components has announced that Rick Rudolph Associates will represent Beacon in the New England states as well as in the greater Albany, New York area. In personnel news, the GIS division of Jurgens Incorporated has added Nichelle Walker to the GIS customer service team and Stephanie Stinson to the GIS warehouse team. Scott Fillion is the new president of the Phillips Screw Company, while Ken Hurley will continue to serve as the company's CEO. Neil Marchuk is now executive vice president, human resources at Arconic. Anixter International has added Bill Simon and Charles Swoboda to its board of directors. And Anders Nystrom has been appointed as the new president and CEO of Bolton. In 2019 milestone anniversary news, SC Fastening Systems LLC is celebrating its 20th year of distributing hardware and industrial supplies. And March 15th marks Brewster Washer's 100th year of making washers, shims, discs, and spacers. In international trade news, new USA anti-dumping and countervailing duty investigations were filed by Vulcan Steel Products Incorporated against imports of carbon and alloy steel threaded rod from China, India, Taiwan, and Thailand. You can get details on all of these stories and more in Fastener Technology International Magazine and the Fastener News Report newsletter, both available at fastenertech.com. Finally, let's turn to the back page to talk about the world's biggest fastener show. The 8th International Exhibition for the Fastener and Fixing Industry, also known as Fastener Fair Stuttgart, is being held this month in three separate exhibit halls of the Stuttgart Exhibition Grounds in Germany. More than 960 exhibitors from 44 different countries are presenting their latest innovations from all areas of fastener and fixing technology. Held every other year, this is the flagship fastener fair for the folks that also produce similar events in the USA, Mexico, India, and Italy, just to name a few. Besides Germany, which comes in as the biggest exhibiting country, major European exhibitor countries at Fastener Fair Stuttgart are Italy, Great Britain, France, Turkey, the Netherlands, and Spain. There are also sizable Asian contingents coming from Taiwan, China, and India. The net exhibition space is around 235,000 square feet, which is more than twice the size of the Las Vegas Fastener Show. The show is quite impressive, and the February-March issue of Fastener Technology International has a 25-page preview of the exhibits. Upcoming issues will feature reports on the show. So if you have never attended it, I suggest you check out our Fastener Fair Stuttgart articles, as well as the online preview available at fastenerfair.com/Stuttgart. This has been Mike McNulty of Fastener Technology International bringing you the Fastener News Report. Please send your news, pictures, comments, corrections, or complaints to me at McNulty@FastenerTech.com.
Bob Reynolds and Rob Reynolds of InSQL Software are up next discussing a direct connection of a different kind. Thanks for listening in, everyone. It's Fully Threaded Radio. ND Industries has been solving customers' toughest problems through innovative technologies, competitive pricing, and industry-leading service since 1955. A family-owned business, ND Industries manufactures and applies fastener locking, bonding, sealing, masking, and assembling products. Their pre-application process makes fasteners ready to use at the point of assembly, resulting in reduced labor costs, time savings, and superior quality assurance. As a fully integrated company, ND handles all aspects of operations from formulating custom chemical compounds and coating fasteners to providing inline inspection, packaging, and delivery services. ND Industries serves the global market with 13 divisions in the continental U.S. and also facilities in Taiwan, China, and Turkey. Learn more about ND Industries at our website at www.ndindustries.com. ND Industries. Innovative technologies, competitive pricing, and industry-leading service. Contact ND today. When top quality and outstanding service are at the top of your list in fastener suppliers, turn to Stelfast. Since 1976, Stelfast has grown to become an industry-leading importer and manufacturer of the highest quality industrial fasteners, specialty items, and automotive parts. Our array of facilities across North America and in Asia, along with full quality control labs and ISO 9001-2008 certifications, ensure the highest quality parts, and at Stelfast, they're delivered with undisputed service excellence. We're family-run and dedicated to your success. Our customers have come to depend on the expertise of our staff and the quality of our products. We also offer a wide range of secondary services to meet some of the toughest requirements you might have. Contact Stelfast today through our website at www.stelfast.com and put us to work for you. Stelfast. Service you deserve. People you trust. Hey, fastener professionals. One of the most anticipated events in the fastener industry is just around the corner. Make plans today to attend Mack Brooks Fastener Fair USA, which takes place in Detroit May 22nd and 23rd, 2019. Over 300 companies from around the world will exhibit at Fastener Fair USA in 2019, showcasing the latest solutions for key industries like automotive, aerospace, construction, power gen, MRO, and more. In addition to exhibits during two full days on the show floor, you'll find plenty of topical information and technical and distribution conference sessions and networking events such as the opening night reception. No matter where you fall in the supply chain, Fastener Fair USA is your opportunity opportunity to join more than 2,000 manufacturers, suppliers, distributors, and end users in the heart of the Midwest at Detroit's Cobo Center, May 22nd and 23rd, 2019. For more information and to register today, go to www.fastenerfair.com/USA. See you at Mack Brooks Fastener Fair, USA.
Well, hey, everybody. This is Carmen Vertullo with the Fastener Training Minute coming to you from the Fastener Training Institute and AIM Testing Laboratory in beautiful El Cajon, California. A question came up recently regarding a product we all know as grade nine bolts. What are grade nine bolts and where do they come from and how do we use them or misuse them? And what do you need to know about grade nine bolts? When we return, I'll tell you what I know.
Thanks, Carmen. This is Joe Morris with the Fastener Training Institute. All right, am I allowed to say welcome to spring, or will I jinx us back to a few more weeks of freezing cold weather? It seems that the entire country was hit with historically cold temperatures this winter. So if you'd like to take a break from the cold and thaw out a little bit, come out to sunny, warm California and join the Fastener Training Institute for some fastener product training. On March 19th, we will present Product Training Part 2 in Costa Mesa, California. In this class, students will learn about screw threads, head styles, coatings, and finishes, plus hydrogen embrittlement. Part 3 will be presented on April 16th, covering topics on metrics, rivets, pins, and anchors. Each one of our product training classes are beneficial on its own. They don't need to be taken in order. So if you'd like to learn more about the products that you buy, sell, warehouse, and ship, please join us. Part 1 did sell out, so don't delay and register soon. All right, if you really can't get on a plane and just fly out to sunny, warm California, you can certainly still train with us. Join us for one of our monthly webinars and watch it from your laptop, anywhere that's convenient for you. On March 29th, Carmen Vertullo will present Hardness Testing in Fasteners. This is really a great webinar because understanding hardness in fasteners is the key to understanding strength and performance. We're also getting ready to host our first Fastener Training Week for 2019, April 1st through the 5th at the IFI headquarters in Cleveland, Ohio. This is the class that you need in order to become a certified fastener specialist. You will spend one full week learning about fasteners with hands-on demonstrations and instruction plus plant tours. We are really close to selling this class out, so if you don't register soon, you may miss out. We will offer Fastener Training Week 3 more times in 2019, so check our website for dates and locations throughout the year. Lastly, I just want to remind you all, our online learning library is now open and ready. We have over 30 fastener training videos available for rent. Please visit our website at fastenertraining.org for a full list of topics. We do have annual subscriptions available and packages to meet any size company. Thanks, everyone. Now back to Carmen.
Well, thank you, Joe, and welcome back, everybody, to the Fastener Training Minute. This is Carmen Vertullo, and today we're talking about grade 9 bolts. Well, when I first came into this industry, I won't tell you how long ago that was, but it was a while back, we sold a product called F911 bolts, and they were made by a company called Foremost. They actually were sold by Foremost. They were made by Lake Erie, and they were very popular because they were stronger than grade 8 bolts. In fact, they were as strong as an alloy steel socket head cap screw in the inch world. Now, a grade 8 bolt, the strength is 150,000 PSI. A socket head cap screw is 180,000 PSI in the smaller sizes and 170,000 PSI in the larger sizes. And that F911 product, or grade 9, was advertised to give you a bolt, actually a heavy hex head cap screw, with the same strength as an alloy steel socket head cap screw. And it was very popular amongst those applications where higher strength was desired. Racing car builders like them, certain types of heavy equipment folks like them a lot. Now, if you've been in any of my classrooms, you may have heard me sort of speak out against this product because it doesn't meet any particular fastener specification. And there are lots of different versions or private label brands of them. And if you look around, I don't think the F911 has been around for a while, but now we have the L9 product. We have the G9 product. I'm not going to necessarily endorse or say anybody's name who makes these. We have the PFC9 product, and we have Bomalloy. And Bomaloy probably was the original version of this product. And actually, Bomaloy advertises up to 200,000 PSI tensile strength. So these are basically higher strength versions of a grade 8 bolt. And if we were going into the metric world, we would have this product automatically available as a property class 12.9. It's one of the reasons you've probably heard me say that our metric fastener designs superior to inch. In some regards, they are. And this is one way they are, because the steel fastener specification for a metric product allows for a high strength property class 12.9, which is the equivalent of 180,000 PSI. So we don't need this product in the metric world. We only need it in the inch world. Now, recently, ASTM has developed a few higher strength products. No one's manufacturing them, but there are some specifications available. So here's my opinion, and maybe this might not be in agreement with everyone, but if you need a product that is higher strength than grade 8, and the difference between a grade 8 and a grade 9, there's no such thing as a specification grade 9. That's just what we call them. If that makes that much difference to you, you probably ought to be looking a little bit closer at that design. It might be better to just use a larger grade 8 bolt. As well, most of these products come zinc plated. And anytime we zinc plate a product that has that high of a tensile strength, 180,000 PSI, we have a hydrogen embrittlement risk. Now, this is a fairly sophisticated product, so the manufacturers probably do everything they're supposed to do to mitigate that risk by properly baking and testing the product. But if you were going to use this in a critical application, and I would assume it would always be a critical application or you would not be concerned about that extra margin of strength, you would want to make sure that the product was properly processed. So if you're going to specify it in, find out from the supplier. How are these plated? How are they baked? How are they tested to make sure that you don't incur a hydrogen embrittlement risk? It's a very good product. If you're a fastener supplier, there's good margins. There's good money to be made. It's important, though, that you also know they generally are sold as a system, so that you'll be buying the bolt, the nuts, and the washers as an assembly, because for a higher strength bolt, we need a higher strength nut. So the standard grade 8 nut would not be appropriate for this bolt. Well, that's what I know about the PFC9s, L9s, G9s, F911, Bomaloy. If I left your favorite one out, I'm sorry about that. There's multiple different versions of these. And if you're using them, you know how to get a hold of me, Carmen V at aimtestlab.com. And I would love to talk to you about your experience using grade 9. Well, this has been Carmen Vertullo with the Fastener Training Minute. Thanks for listening.
This is Pam Barry with Advanced Components. You're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Most Fully Threaded listeners know that InSQL Software has been a longtime friend and sponsor of this podcast. And joining us now, it's Bob Reynolds and Rob Reynolds. Hey, guys, good to have you on the podcast. You, the second time, Bob.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you, Eric and Brian.
That's all right. Pleasure's ours. Okay. And to the listeners.
Yeah, it's been too long. Well, how long ago was that, Bob, that you first made your appearance here?
I think it was probably about 3 years ago, three or four. You guys been doing it that long?
Oh.
it's been longer than that. It's probably about 5 or 6 years.
Well, we've been associated now for a lot longer than that, too. So, yeah, time does fly. Actually, we have a lot to cover, but we wanted to get you on because of a couple of conversations we've had in recent episodes. And a lot of you heard the episode with Steve Dunham from Sasco Fasteners, and we talked a little bit about Direct Connect. And then on episode 137, in general, we were talking about e-commerce and getting people to click on stuff online. Brian's fond of the story of when we first started with FCH, people said, oh, you're never going to find anybody who would want to start buying fasteners online, which we laughed at the time, you know, and of course, these days, it's even more of a joke.
Definitely.
Right.
So InSQL's dipping its toe in a big way into e-commerce, right? And, or should I say InSQL?
Hey, that works.
Yeah, that was a pretty satisfying ad that Rob had put together. And we got some really good feedback on that.
You've gotten a lot of mileage out of that ad.
Yeah, I like the ad.
It's pretty true. I think it hit home. if you call us and squeak, well, that's not the first time we've heard it. So,
no, it's in SQL, everybody. That's the real way. It's a kind of a funny ad, but it's a serious piece of software.
Absolutely. And I think just touching on the e-commerce that you just brought up, we are starting to see quite a few of our customers move to an e-commerce shopping cart platform. And just across the fastener industry, I think one of the big parts about that is not just the shopping cart, but enabling your customers to go online and use the customer portal. And that's really a big part of what our customers like about our websites, is being able to go on there and pay any open invoices, take care of those non-revenue producing tasks that don't necessarily have to have a salesman involved with. You can check your aging or reprint packing lists, stuff like that. So our customers are really pushing their customers to use that functionality on the websites.
So let me get this straight. InSQL software is an ERP platform. Okay. Most people know that. And the web, let's say it this way, the shopping cart module that we're talking about now, that's an add-on to your main ERP. Is that true? And if so, is there a name for this module that you call it? I mean, how are you packaging it?
Yes, the website is an add-on, and it's just an InSQL website. We have a base template that we build out and works really well for our customers. They can pull it up on their smart devices as well, so it's responsive. And as far as marketing it, a lot of our customers, you know, they want to keep it customer driven through the customer portal, but then other fastener companies don't mind having pricing out there, you know, for the general public to buy product online. So it's pretty flexible.
Yeah. So you have, but this is more than just a click here and buy it. This is actually extends right into the customers of your customers being able to find details about their open invoices and things.
Correct.
Like
yep.
That. Is that right?
Yep. And that's all part of the customer portal there. They've got their own dashboard where they can go in and view and open and close orders, reprinting certs, track their shipments, stuff like that, checking previous sales, being to reorder off of all the previous sales. Similar to how when we go to pay our bills, you know, our electric bills, there's an account dashboard that you have where you can take care of a lot of that just simple work.
So this is a fairly fully featured module, and you've been at it for a little while, so I'm pretty sure a lot of the basic bugs were worked out and you're pretty stable now. Of course, that's subject to specific configuration issues that different distributors would encounter as they're deploying this. Let me ask you this, Bob Reynolds. You've been at this game for a long time. When did you first start getting your customers asking for this kind of capability? In other words, how long has e-commerce really been in the zone for a lot of our listeners, a lot of our customers?
Well, it's been about 10 years since the first customer that asked me about it kind of pushed us in that direction. We did try and partner with an outside company, actually a couple different ones over some time. Both were recommended by existing customers of InSQL at the time, and they looked promising. But not having control over the programmers at the third party made it difficult for us to maintain the level of quality that we have come to be known, you know, for in InSQL with our ERP solution, and also the need to tie the two together, the ERP having one database and having the knowledge, of course, that what the customer's doing with the data once they get it over the internet, whether it be an order or the customer looking through to actually look at quantities, to be able, like Rob mentioned, to get certs, to get their invoices or reprint them, and even to take a credit card and pay for orders. So after spending pretty good fair amount of money looking at third-party solutions, we hired our first web programmer. And I think that was probably about 8 years ago. And since then, we've put together an entire division that handles the web. And you know, we've seen multiple companies that spent what I would term a pretty good amount of money, you know, $30,000, $40,000 with a third party to build a website for them. And the customer has to maintain a separate database. It doesn't really tie in directly to their ERP solution or to us. And we've dealt with some of these. And over the years, we've just taken over the whole process.
You're right. You can spend a lot of money on setting up a web system, and it still doesn't have necessarily work, okay, as we've known, and we have many instances of. Everyone's got some horror story of them and actually not even getting a delivery of anything.
Well, the philosophy of the ERP to begin with is that you have a unified system and everything integrates with it. And so this is a logical extension for a lot of companies. But you said basically that it's been 10 years. Now, those were the early adopters. You know, what I'm trying to get at is the trend here in the industry and as you see it. You know, so out of all the distributors that you work with, I mean, how many of them do you think are actually looking to get online or are online? I mean, where in the trend are we? I mean, it's still, we're beyond early adopters now. So where in the trend would you say we are?
We've got 300 plus distributors that run in SQL software, different sizes, different scope of work. But Rob, how many would you say we have running website?
Off the top of my head, I would say probably about 100 of them, maybe about a third.
Wow, that's actually quite good, actually.
Yeah. Well, and it started, like Bob mentioned, probably somewhere near about 8-10 years ago. But really, in the past couple of years, it's picked up for us pretty good. We typically have about 20 to 30 different web projects going at a time. And that's just because it's kind of an ongoing process. It's not within SQL. It's not we set up the website and that's it. We continually work with our customers to just update their website. There's constantly new product going on, new pricing being pushed back and forth. And that's what's key about having the one database. Our websites use the same database as our software. So that way, as far as the maintenance and upkeep go, once you get your website set up, it's pretty minimal upkeep and maintenance within SQL.
Do you have a feel for the target markets that most of these guys who are already online, what are they looking at? In other words, you mentioned before that some of them are really still going distributor to distributor, but others are focusing more on end users, OEMs, and so forth. Do you have a breakdown on who's doing what at this point?
I think mostly the customers, Eric, are looking at B2C for if they're looking at B2C to generate new leads, new customers. So they're more tied in with SEO and trying to get, you know, above the watermark, you know, in Google. which, you know, if it's below the watermark, a lot of times people don't look. Then they have the pay-per-click ads that are above there.
You're speaking to the choir and this one, Bob.
And so, you know, bottom line is you have the people that are more oriented that way. And they want to have a sticky site. You guys know what that means? Somebody finds your site, they stick on it.
Yeah.
You know, the programmers call it that.
Right.
And so, you know, something that they find that's easy to use, that's appealing to them, you know, appealing to the eye, but allows them to move around quickly and generate their order and get off of the system. And you start talking millennials and you start talking about websites, typically, and I think, you know, a lot of the old sales guys like myself, you know, lament kind of the thought process of we don't do as much of the, you know, go see the customer, talk to the customer, relationship management with the customer. At, you know, today, mostly because people have the computer and you look at, you know, BBI and you look at, well, even, you know, every master distributor that's out there, you know, it has a very nice website, but BBI in particular, you know, gives a discount to the customers that buy on the website. They realize, and they're smart in doing so, that if they have less people talking to these people on the phone, then they can actually put the product out there at a more competitive price, and they can utilize those people more for, let's say, quality control, shipping, and whatever. So the long story short is everybody's moving to it. You know, it used to be that you had just a few people out there that were pushing the envelope. But today we see that everybody wants to have a web presence, even if that presence is that they're partnering with an eBay or an Amazon and getting orders sent to their system through those larger companies.
That's true. Your comment about BBI was a good one, which is that it's so useful for them to encourage people to use the website. They give a discounted price.
Yep.
It makes sense.
You know, there's a number of things that actually, I guess, if I can give us a little of a pat on the back here. A number of things that we've done in the industry that were kind of first, dealing with Bob and Barry Porteous to generate our Direct Connect. You know, that was that was done by us. It was the first web-based solution where you could literally have our users, the distributors, look into their suppliers' inventory and logistically order a product, get it shipped in, and not have to do anything other than work inside of their ERP solution. And today, that's actually been copied by multiples, our competitors, and we've also put it into play, obviously, with many other companies. BBI, of course, bought Porteus, so that was our link into working with BBI. So they're the largest company that we have out there. I don't know as far as the number of users in InSQL that actually buy product from BBI, but I bet it's a pretty hefty number. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we take the mundane paperwork, faxing orders over, that type of stuff out of play, and they're working on the same screen that they work on day in and day out entering orders. So very quickly, you don't have to go to a website, log in, go find the product. When you're on a product, it literally will pull up that product on the supplier's server, check for quantity, give them a price. And I have to say, like when Stelfast tied into the Direct Connect, they're now a part of Lindstrom, of course, everybody knows that. But the bottom line is FCH did a hell of a job. Can I say that? In
SPG, don't worry.
In scrubbing their data for them with the FCH scrubber to bring all of the cross references together and basically to get the parts out there so that their customers could dig deeper easily. And, we're proud of the fact that we have an interface to FCH. And for any of our customers that run our website and want to have that scrubber built in, which is amazing, by the way, we have that ability. So bottom line is, and we've run that, and it probably makes a website twice as effective as any other website that's out there.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that you're right. There's because you can do the transfer, so someone gets ABC company sends their inventory to Stelfast or BBI, and they get all their part numbers matched up, and that's only valid at the moment it was done. And then Lindstrom comes along or BBI adds a whole socket line, and all of a sudden there's no matching part numbers for any of that stuff.
Right.
And so the benefit of being able to just have this thing that sits there and, looks up parts on the fly means that you can stay in touch with your supplier all the time. And,
Bob, thank you for.
Yeah, thanks for the great plug. That wasn't in the script, actually. Everyone will think it was.
Yeah, thank you for pointing out the integration there with the scrubber. Guys, we've covered a lot of ground here, right? And I want to just point out for listeners that these are all related subjects because everybody wants to get online in one way, shape, or form. And of course, just using InSQL to organize your business with a basic ERP is another point to consider. But again, we're traversing a lot of subjects here. So we started with web interfaces. We kind of talked about the Direct Connect system, which is a great system, but again, slightly off on a tangent and then moving off to the scrubber part of it. So different topics, but all related.
Eric, are you accusing me of moving on to tangents?
You are the master. You are the master, Bob. That's why you always have so many people in your booth there in Vegas. I mean, because you can really cover a lot of ground, and you do. You're good at it.
Selling ice to Eskimos.
I've spent a few hours of, was it, did I say hours, in your booth over the years, and I've kind of come to that conclusion.
I'm sure it's added up to the hours anyway, right?
Of course, you're a pioneer in another way that a lot of people remember you for too, and you, ever since we first started working with you, you've always had a couple of kegs available. And I think you set a trend, because you walk around now out there and, other, let's say it this way, everybody doesn't have one, but a lot of guys are taking your lead there too.
Yeah. Well, we found that, there were many people with parched throats that were very happy to partake in a beer while they listened to me drone on. So today, we have a pretty comfortable booth, so you can come in and sit down, grab a beer or a water for those that don't drink, and, take a look at the software when we're in the show. But kind of moving back towards the website, if we have a third of our customers roughly running websites, my prediction would be that within another 10 years, we would probably have as much as 75% of the customers on websites. There's going to be certain people that have small businesses that, you know, deal in a local geographic territory, and they're not going to want it. But anybody that's really looking to grow their business and exponentially and not have to spend, you know, an inordinate amount of money to do so, are going to add this, because it's basically like adding salespeople without having them sitting in there and without paying them money.
Wow. Right, I should be using that when our people come to see me. Why would you want a website? Well,
yeah.
Okay. Where do I start?
I mean, it's kind of true, right, Brian? When you take a look at it and you look at how do I organically grow my business? This might be a segue for another topic that I'm kind of hot on, is the inorganic growing by buying other companies. But, you know, long story short, we basically look at how can we grow our business without spending dollar for dollar, you know, having to have a person sitting at the desk answering the phone or having to have outbound salespeople. Can we generate more business? That's where SEO comes in, search engine optimization, so that when I log in and I go look for the FCH scrubber, I find it, and I find it, like I mentioned, above the watermark, which means I don't have to take the cursor and go, or the mouse and go down the page and look through, you know, the 57 different, you know, searches. You're right at the top. So, you know, those are things that I think people are more and more getting. And it kind of amazes me, because I used to call this industry low-tech, high-tech, meaning we kind of had a high-tech product, but we were selling it to a low-tech industry. And you guys have probably seen that's changed quite a bit in the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah. No, it's I mean, a lot of the users sort of are anonymous in many ways. And we don't, you know, our guess is that of the people using ours, like 60% are distributors and 40% are OEMs or fastener users who just went searching. Say, went searching on Google. I think that's as probably 50% as all the users come through Google or Bing or something like that. They're just searching for something that an ordinary distributor would never dream of searching right. The web for. So if you don't have a website, they're never going to find it.
Okay, so let's rewind. We talked a few minutes ago about the challenges of deploying this. And Rob, you can probably chime in here, because as you work with InSQL software users, you're involved in the deployments of these, and there are sticking points sometimes. Or let's say it this way, there's areas that you want to be very careful about so that you have a successful deployment. And over the course of your experience, what areas can you recommend our listeners pay attention to as they're getting into this? SEO, we know, is a big area. What are some of the others?
Sure. And I think the major sticking point or hurdle is with any website, regardless of who you're building it with, is the initial setup, making sure that everything is going to look good when it gets pushed out to the web, as far as your items go, your pricing. And one of the key areas that's a lot of work that we've noticed in the setup is having the search capabilities, making that easy. So when our customers go online, it's very easy to find product. And the setup for all of that on the items, there's a hierarchy where the categories are created along the left side of most websites. And when you hover over it, it breaks down to another a subcategory, and then a third subcategory. And within SQL, we have a parametric search as well. People can search based off of the item specs, and getting all of those item specs, whether it be the thread, the pitch, the if it's plated, all of that into your database. So when it pushes out to the website, it's organized, it's easily searchable. That takes a lot of work, and could take months. And we've actually started working with those guys over at the FCH, Fastener Clearinghouse. They
those guys.
Yeah, they have a scrubber that.
Where are they?
They have a scrubber that works very well for our fastener companies, as far as helping set up those items. So what could take, you know, 2, 3, 4, 6 months, depending on how much time our customers have to put into the item setup, it's what, 5 minutes with you guys if they run it through the scrubber. So
it can be
a very powerful tool that helps one of the big hurdles as far as the setup goes. And that it comes back to having one database. After that, if you're working with an outside third party, the upkeep on that's going to be difficult. Well, if it's all set up, for example, on our websites, it's all set up in SQL. Yeah, there's a little work at first getting it set up, and with the help of the scrubber, that's huge. But having it be one database, the going forward, it's very minimal upkeep and just makes it well worth the time to have everything integrated like that.
Right. Thanks for mentioning that we're working along with you in some of these deployments and getting that data cleansed. I will say this, both of you, Reynolds, you did very well in bringing Diana into your organization because she's working, I know, with a lot of your customers in this area, and she knows fasteners. So it's good to see that an ERP vendor has got real fastener pedigree in the organization, and that is not hurting you. So what you're saying there, Rob, is that the categorization is one side of this. That is a kind of a strategic decision that's made in the early stages. But then there's a phase that's just simple data cleansing, and then there's ongoing maintenance. Is that true?
That's correct. I mean, once you get the majority of your items set up, that's most of the work in the beginning. Because if you want to check out and have freight added, you need the weights, you need specific pricing for each customer. And that's very hard to keep up if you're working off of two different databases.
Oh, yeah.
When a company sets out to do this, normally, or could you give us a range? I mean, what's the shortest critical path in terms of how long does it take? Okay, that's what I'm asking. And then on the other side, have you seen some companies that for whatever reason, they just dragged their feet in it and it really dragged out? I mean, what's the range here?
The range typically, we just had one go live that was a couple months, 2 months. That was on the quick end. We can have a website ready within a few weeks. If all of the item information, if all of the setup is already done. So, I mean, in a couple weeks, I think, on NSQL side. So the majority of the time it takes is based off of how much time our customers have to put towards the project. And they can run out. We've seen them run out maybe 6 months. 6 months is probably typical. However, it depends how they want to do it. Some of our customers start with maybe their top 10 selling items and then just continually add as they go. Which makes it a lot quicker, you know, to get going. So depending on how they want to do it, usually 2 to 6 months for a website. Some take longer, some drag out if they get busy and can't put the times toward it.
Yeah, and they haven't put it as their top priority because you have to be prepared to spend the time and effort.
Exactly.
Well, Eric, you mentioned Diana, and Diana deal is actually the project manager for all the companies that go live with an NSQL website. So we found that, you know, that's uniquely different than the project management that we have for the ERP solution. It's more focused, of course, but the bottom line there is that, like you mentioned, her background in the industry and having come from THB, and she, you know, has great knowledge of fastener products, does help, because as Rob mentioned, we keep talking about one database. And the reason that that's important is you literally in SQL can go into the item screen and check a box that says, put this on the web.
Right.
And it's on the web.
Right.
Now that's good. Brian, you've probably seen people that have multiple databases trying to do this.
Oh, mate, I have. You imagine the messes I've seen, and so the ability, I was going to ask you that question. So that's pretty cool, actually, just to say. So you can actually, because the fear for some people would be that they wouldn't want some things to go on the web because there might be specific parts they are holding for specific customers, so they wouldn't ever want those to go near a web unless it's only that customer.
Right. And of course, we can take care of that too.
Cool.
So in terms of the UI then, so we're talking about the back end with all this data scrubbing and everything, which makes a lot of people's eyes glaze over because they never touch that part of it. But on the front end, you were mentioning stickiness and how to keep people there. And this was exactly what we were talking about in episode 137 when we scratched our head and said, we got to get the NSQL boys on here. What do you do to make sure that you have a sticky site? How do you keep people there once they hit the page and then keep buying from that shopping cart? Well, what's your approach to that?
Well, first, it's understanding your customer for the distributor or our customer, understanding the customer and what they want. And of course, now that we've got 100 of these out there, the bottom line is that we do see trends in what people want and the way things are laid out and the searching capability, et cetera. So it is that stickiness that needs to be there. It needs to, you're a fastener customer, Eric, and you go online and you're looking for a product. So the SEO puts my company in front of you. You click on my website, you go there and you go, what the heck? I can't get around this website. This doesn't make any sense to me. What are you going to do?
Yeah, go somewhere.
You're going to leave. Else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, competitors just a click away.
Yeah.
Then you're going to find, let's say you find Brixen's website, one of our customers that we've built a website for. And Brixen, you know, their website is pretty easy. You see a bunch of pictures of different categories. You go select a category, you go in, and then there are different parameters, as Rob's mentioned, to be able to dig down and find the exact part that I want. And I can go in and see the quantity they have on hand at the different branches. I can look and see if they have enough for what I want. I can put an order in. I can then build an order, and the shopping cart will allow them to take that order and send it in, or just ask for verification on pricing. So ask for a quote on those items, and then they're done with that process. Next time they go to buy a fastener product, they're going to go to that Brixen website because they're happy with what happened before.
Yeah, it all sounds simple, isn't it?
Well, that's what we try and make it.
Right. It's a lot of crap actually behind the scenes to make all that stuff happen. But if the customer can do all the things he needs to do in one place, why would you bother going somewhere else?
Absolutely.
That's incidentally the great fears that used to get proposed to me whenever someone would look at me showing all the stuff on the FCH site, and they'd say, well, it means I couldn't put my stuff there because it means my customers would see my competitors' stuff. I said, yeah, well, but if you've got great customer service, why would one of your customers go anywhere else? If you're terrified your customers are going to leave, you know, you've got a bigger problem in the pricing structure.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and we've come a long way as an industry. I mean, I think we haven't really mentioned too much the Amazon effect during this conversation, but it's always looming in the background. And I think there's a lot of companies that are feeling the heat. They might just be thinking about getting online as a defensive, reflexive maneuver, you know, without thinking too much about it. But the fact of the matter is that it's just a reality now. It's that your competitor is online or he's going to be soon. And it's just a fact of life. You can't cry about it. You have to face it and do something about it.
Yeah. And your customer wants you to be online, probably more so now, because it's just an easier for them to click through things and find out status of orders than calling up to find out on the phone where something is.
Do you guys over at InSQL, I mean, do you have any kind of an idea about what the Amazon effect is going to bring to the fastener industry in terms of what you're hearing from your customers? Perhaps are you being requested to add functionality in for integration with Amazon, or what are you hearing?
Yes, it's becoming more of a request, especially I'd say in the past year. And that's not an issue. We've tied in with multiple different web platforms for our customers. I think that it is interesting too, because some of the companies that we've started working with, maybe there's one or two people, but they're doing massive amounts of volume. Just strictly eBay, Amazon, Etsy, whatever platform that they want to be on. There's APIs and we can tie into those, so we can take care of them.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Well, the next one's going to be Alibaba, right?
Yeah, it's a good point. Have you heard anything? Have you had any requests for APIs to Alibaba?
Not yet, but I just saw this morning that one of the major retailers is tying in with them and going to be their distribution arm in the U.S. So you'll see it. It'll happen.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, our servers we have attempted hacks all the time that come from, let's just say that part of the planet. frankly, we're all both kind of surprised that we haven't had any acquisition offers from those guys or companies like them too, you know, but I think you're right. I mean, stuff like that, it's going to come. It's right on the horizon, if not here already.
Yep.
Speaking of acquisitions,
Yeah, you mentioned everybody knows about Lindstrom and Stelfaz, which is true. And I guess being in this industry, you can't really operate without taking notice. I mean, how's that affecting in sequel? I mean, what do you see coming down the road?
Well, I think as long as money stays cheap, you're going to see more consolidation. I think there are companies that didn't have great succession plans that are maybe being bailed out, which is good for them, really. And or they, you know, skipped the succession plan they had in place because there's enough money for them to retire now. It's been quite an interesting time, Eric. I see, because of the amount of money that's out there and available to be lent at pretty cheap rates, you know, historically at this point in time, there are many companies that are borrowing and going out and acquiring other companies. Those companies in the fastener industry, a lot of those are our customers that are either staying on in Sequel software or have to move over to the parent company's software. So that does affect us somewhat. And then some of them are our customers that are out doing the acquisitions. I do find it kind of interesting that when a larger company buys a smaller one, the smaller company is an entrepreneur that's been successful or fairly successful, they go in and change a lot of the business practices and say, hey, you got to mold yourself to what we do. That being said, of course, they bought the company so they can do whatever they want to do.
Right. There's a lot to be said.
Yeah. But for us, it does make it an interesting time because, you know, we can sell a customer and have a good customer that we've had for, say, 10 years running in SQL. They're very happy. And they, you know, unfortunately have to switch to whatever other, you know, ERP solution is being used by the parent company. And it also affords us opportunities to sell more licenses when our customers are out there doing the acquiring, you know, and they bring in other companies that they want to have on the same software package as the rest of their branches and divisions.
So it cuts both ways for you guys.
It does. Yes. And, you know, if I had a crystal ball, I just want to go out and sell to the people that are growing their business instead of the people that are going to be acquired.
True.
Yeah. 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 Tell me about it. I go fishing occasionally with a guy who's responsible for snapping up a few of our customers here and there over the years, FCH users. And that's a frequent topic when we're out there casting away. You know, hey, I wish you just quit buying up all my guys, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I could understand
but
that.
But it's all part of the game.
Yeah, it does make it interesting. So,
well, some of the ideas that we've discussed during this conversation apply to any fastener distributor who's looking to get out there online and sell on the web. Others, of course, it's going to apply directly to InSQL users. But I think any fastener distributor take value out of today's conversation for sure. So we thank you for discussing everything with us, guys. And of course, the big fastener show, Fastener Fair, as they're terming it, is happening in May in Detroit. So you guys are based in Detroit. You must be looking forward to that. Finally, a show in your backyard.
Absolutely. I had a great time last year in Cleveland. It's coming to Detroit this year, and we will be there. We've got a booth set up, and looking forward to seeing many of our customers there as well, and new business. So should be a good time.
Are you going to be able to do demos of some of these web capabilities at your booth at the show?
We can usually do that, depending on how busy the booth is. We have in the past, if someone wants to. A lot of times, people are okay. You know, meeting after, but we can certainly do it there too.
Eric, that's probably the easiest thing to be demonstrated. All you have to do is have a connection to the internet and, you know, showing web pages is actually pretty easy and quick.
As long as the connection's there, then we can do it. The Wi-Fi.
Okay. I don't rely on that.
Yeah, Brian for years has insisted that we bring our own web server, which we have cleverly hidden under the Fastenertron at all the shows we attend. So we're not Wi-Fi dependent, but I guess at this point, Brian, we could probably drop the security blanket because it's fairly dependable. But yeah, I guess you're going to persevere with that, aren't you?
It's a real pain in the neck.
Hey, I feel for you guys. I've gone through all those years as well. So bottom line is, it has become certainly easier and with, you know, your own Wi-Fi cards and whatever, more reliable. Trying to rely on any show company to provide me Wi-Fi, that's been interesting over the years and expensive, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, well, but the point is you're going to be there at Fastener Fair in May. You'll be at Fastener Tech in June. And then, of course, everybody will see you in Vegas once again in September, it is this year. So in 2019, what's your big new feature that you're selling aside from web-related stuff, if there is one?
Well, I don't know if we have a big new feature. I think that I can tell you that recently we're actually going through an upgrade to our headquarters in the Detroit area, and we've doubled the size of our building as we've continued to grow. And you, as I've beat into everybody's head in the industry, that, you know, we want to be the leader in support and, you know, have the right amount of people for the customers that are out there. You know, we've grown to the point where I wanted to have a building that'll carry us through the next 10, 15 years here. And so we are going through that. So there may be, you know, a little bit of pain for our employees, but in today's day and age, of course, you know, we can send them home for the week if it's too loud, and using the same type of tools that we're using right here today for this,
yeah,
we have the ability to, you know, have them answer phone calls from customers anywhere in the country.
So you're saying that the build out of your office is not all dedicated to your new giant office?
Wait, I'm confused.
complete with putting with putting green.
Oh, actually, we've added a small gym for our employees. There'll be a couple of treadmills and a rowing machine and a yoga area and some weightlifting and a shower and changing facility. And so it isn't all for employees, but we also added 4 new offices and 10 new cubicles. And so we're giving ourselves the ability to, pretty much double the amount of people we have in the office at this point in time. And that's our support office. You know, we let Rob, you know, have an office there too, because he's in the headquarters. And Eric, we let the
storage closet.
We let the sales guys have a little room. You know, every once in a while, we look in there and throw a stake in for them and shut the door, you know, so.
Yeah, so just head over to the president of the universe desk and go down the hall, take a left. And Well, that's cool. That's cool. Well, congratulations on that expansion. And good for you for really building out that kind of life work experience. I mean, it's the trend. And I'm sure you've heard a few of our past episodes where we describe what's going on or actually happened now in a few years ago with Field and some of our other guys that we've had on. I mean, it always seems like it's a great success when companies do that. So good for you.
Yeah, the stand-up desks are all the rage now, you know, and colors and, you know, light, and trying to make sure all the ergonomics are there for the employees and, you know, the happy employees and happy customers.
Are there beanbag chairs?
No, but every chair we have in the office for an employee is an Aeron, which I'm sure you guys have probably heard of. They have lumbar support there. You can, you know, adjust them 18 different ways, and no complaints from the employees.
Don't give away too many secrets now, Bob.
Yeah, I'll have to tell Eric it's time I got a new chair. Thank you.
Oh, you're suffering over there, aren't you?
Yeah, no. All right.
Okay, guys, well, we're going to wind down. We want to thank you, Bob Reynolds and Rob Reynolds from InSQL Software. Everybody, you can get out there and connect with them online, of course. Big surprise, www.inxsql.com. It's a little bit of a funny name. It's Sirius Software. InSQL is a great partner and longtime friend of the podcast. And thanks, guys, for coming online with us. We'll see you for sure in person in May.
Thank you, Eric and Brian.
Looking forward to it.
Cool.
Brian and Eric, they're online. Fastener Talk Radio Extremist. You're right on with Fully Threaded Radio.
Harry, now that you use InSQL software, how do you like it?
InSQL has delivered. They truly are written for fastener distributors. It's affordable and their support staff is great.
We found InSQL's support staff has depth. They know our industry, and they certainly know their software. I see they've helped you pronounce InSQL.
Yes, but what does in SQL mean? Is it written in SQL? Is the data stored in SQL? Are they located in SQL?
In SQL uses the industry standard Microsoft SQL database, which is why it's so powerful and easy to use.
Oh, the database is stored in SQL. I don't even know where that is. I hear it's a nice place.
Harry, InSQL uses a SQL database because it's current technology and your data is completely accessible. No more expensive custom reports.
Is that why InSQL is so easy to use? Where is SQL on the map?
One of their many support members will help you answer that. Go to their website, www.inxsql.com, or call toll-free, 877-446-9775.
Since 1905, Buckeye Fasteners and the Ohio Nut and Bolt Company have been supplying the world with high-quality fasteners. Our standard product lines include weld fasteners, graded weld screws, leg levelers, self-clinching hardware, clevis pins, rivet nuts, and various other fastener lines, allowing us to support virtually all types of industries. We have complete custom manufacturing capabilities in low carbon, medium carbon, and stainless steel materials, and our quality systems are registered to ISO standards. Our on-staff engineering department can assist you with product development and provide total technical support. Our knowledgeable sales team members offer superior customer service and are here to answer any questions you may have regarding our products. Having a hard time finding a part? Let our sourcing specialist do the work for you to locate those items. We offer competitive pricing with typically smaller minimums and shorter lead times. To find out more about Buckeye Fasteners, please call us at 800-437-1689 or on the web at buckeyefasteners.com. Buckeye Fasteners, more than just weld.
Parker Fasteners is your premier cold heading manufacturer, forging the future with precision and quality as our top priority. When you think of domestically produced sockets and tamper-proof screws from alloy and stainless, including A286, think Parker Fasteners. Our lockout line of security fasteners feature high torque, oval center pin design, and unique lobes that provide one-of-a-kind security for your customers. Our in-house 3D printing capability makes the prototyping process fast and affordable, and we're ready to produce your large or small run orders with highly competitive pricing and unbeatable lead times. So, forge the future with Parker Fasteners. Visit Parker Fasteners online today at parkerfasteners.com.
Coming to you live from a much larger desk drawer, this is Jake Davis with BTM Manufacturing, and you are listening to my friends Brian and Eric on Fully Threaded Radio.
Brian and Eric, your online fastener amigos, back with you. Well, Brian, it was good to have Bob and Rob Reynolds from InSQL on the podcast, and I have to say that I'm pleasantly surprised and grateful that they were so generous in their recommendation of the FCH part of what they do. I mean, it's a great connection that we have with them, albeit a small one, given InSQL is a pretty serious piece of software. It's a software platform, actually, and yeah, it was a good conversation.
And the reality is, you know, we talk to fastener people every day, and the usefulness of, you know, really being able to use Direct Connect and how it really can save work. In other words, you can just be sort of, you know, looking at an item and realize you need to order another 500 of them and just click a button and then see that, you know, Steelfast or BBI or someone has got how many thousands they have on the line at their various different locations, and then place an order that doesn't, you know, that's it. The order goes off to BBI or Steelfast or whoever it is, numerous other people. And you don't have to redo anything. It's all there and done once, which is, you know, one of the great things. It's a very, really, really good piece of functionality.
Yeah, people joke about the fastener industry being low tech or behind the times. And let's say it this way, it's not a bleeding edge kind of an industry, but systems like this can really move a fastener distributor up a couple of notches in terms of efficiency, profitability, and so forth. So hope you got something out of that, folks, that conversation. And I think it was applicable to InSQL users, but any fastener distributor who's looking to get online. or move with the times.
Right.
Well, we're moving with the times, folks, and we're kind of winding down episode 138 here. I'd like to thank all of our guests, Bob and Rob Reynolds from InSQL Software most recently, but also Charlie Kerr from Kerr Lakeside. As usual, I've got like four or five different things I want to talk about next time he's on. You should have heard the stuff we had to cut out, folks. Also, Mike McNulty from Fastener Technology International, along with Worth VP Mark Strandquist. They covered the Fastener Distributor Index numbers. Mike had all the headlines. Thanks, gentlemen.
Yep.
Paula Evitz of the MWFA gave us the rundown of Fastener Tech 19 coming up in June. Don't miss it, everybody.
Right. The social event of the year of the in the fast industry in Chicago. Okay.
Oh, clearly.
And he might do some business, too.
Most assuredly. And as always, Carmen Vertulo brought us the Fastener Training Minute. Nicely done once again, Carm. The title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Stealthfast. For service you deserve and people you trust, it's Stealthfast. And Brighton Best International. Tested, tried, and true. Fully Threaded Radio is also sponsored by Buckeye Fasteners, BTM Manufacturing, Eurolink Fastener Supply Service, Fastener Technology International, InSQL Software, Mac Brooks Fastener Fair USA, ND Industries, Parker Fasteners, The Worth Group, Volt Industrial Plastics, and Solution Industries, home of Solution Man. We say it every episode, folks, but we truly do appreciate you listening into the podcast and sharing it with your friends and associates, and we want to hear what you have to say or suggestions that you can provide. The email address is ftr@fullythreaded.com, and Twitter is always an option. We're out there under the handle Fully Threaded.
Eric monitors Twitter a little more carefully than I do, okay?
Oh, please.
Okay, a lot more carefully.
You've been out there a little bit more lately. We've seen you.
I know. I lurk mainly. I'm a lurker.
Yeah, what am I doing? I'm not advocating social media, but it does have its uses. I'll have to say that. It is but one way of making connections with people, but there's another way to make a direct connection, and that's through trade shows, as we've talked about today and in many past episodes. And guess what, Bri? I've got us lined up with our booths for the big shows this year.
Wow.
We're way ahead of schedule this time.
Okay. Everyone else has had this sorted out for months and months and months, but this is pretty good for us. Okay. Okay. Well, good.
It's always a crapshoot every year, Bri, where we're going to be.
I know. You can't really. And you sort of look at these giant plans and try and work out, well, where would people be going? And then sometimes it's just you don't know how people are going to really walk through the aisles.
Well, anticipating the traffic flow is definitely a science, but all the big guys, you know. And they sign up for a couple of years in advance usually, and they're right there in the front. So that's where you want to be. But that's not to say that there aren't other places and you can't get activity in other places. But I have to say it this way. There are a few places that you probably, they're not as desirable.
Right. Having a giant column right through the middle of your booth, that would be one of them, okay, which we've also had. Right. How are we going to fit anything here?
That was really a crazy year. I think, though, I got the reservation that year like a week and a half ahead of Vegas, and that was many years ago before I kind of knew the ropes a little bit. Anyway, I'm looking here at Fastener Fair in Detroit coming up in May, and looks like we're in pretty good location right across, especially for you, Bri, because right across the aisle is our friends over at Buckeye Fasteners, and you know what that means.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Very nice. Okay. It means at the end of the day, when you sort of lost your voice, you'll get a rusty bolt brought over just when you need it most.
Your old friend, Larry Kelly, will personally yeah. hand deliver an old rusty bolt to the booth. You can always count on him for that. And look, it saves him the walk this year, Bri.
I know. Larry looks after me. He's very good. Okay.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And then right next to them, Solution Industries.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be a happy corner of the show. I could tell you that right now, folks. We're in booth 1103.
This is where everyone needs to be, okay? This is the biggest group of friendly people around in the show, I can tell you that.
Actually, looking across the floor plan, there's a lot of friendly people going to be at this show. And ours is going to be a very happy corner, but it looks like it's filled in quite well. There's still a few empty booths on the one far wall, but my guess is that those are mostly reserved by now. And we'll see. We'll all be in Detroit to find out.
Yeah.
Now, Fastener Tech, which we were just talking about with Paula earlier in the show, wouldn't miss that one either. Wouldn't advise anyone to miss it. But I don't know where Nancy's going to put us this year, other than she always takes care of us. So we're in Nancy's good hands.
Yeah, I know. We're frequently in Nancy's good hands. She's very good looking after us, okay? Yeah, actually, for those of you who haven't been to Fastener Tech, it's just where people meet all the people that they sort of known for years and they come back to. And there's the social 2 hours at the end of it is worth it absolutely, okay? You need to cram in.
Well, plus, I think this year you're going to see a lot more people head over to that bar across the way and do the karaoke. Now, last time, it wasn't in last year, it was in 2017 because, again, it's biennial, everyone.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. So I think a lot more people are going to head over to that. Next episode, we'll share the name of that place with. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
I'm sure Baron knows it off by heart.
Yeah, he was a hit.
Right.
Now I'm looking here at the floor plan for Vegas. That's the big one, everyone. This year we're in booth 1871, and I'm looking right across the way and one over. This is going to be deja vu, Bri. It was last year's neighbors, Chicago Hardware and Fixture. So looks like we're both playing that same game of roulette.
Yeah, we actually usually get to know our neighbors pretty well. And the Chicago Hardware people, we've got to spend a lot of time talking to.
Well, we've known them for a long time. It's just that what are the odds of being right across from them again or right next to them? Anyway, they're our neighbors. Now, I also noticed that just down the aisle from where we're at, there's a vacancy, Bri. So you might be able to get some quality sunglasses or perhaps a cell phone case, depending on who takes that, you know?
Or a massage, probably. A neck massage. Yeah.
You never know. That's the wild card in the aisle, the one on the end there.
Yeah. Good.
The other thing that I notice about this year's Vegas show floor plan is that there is no Stelfast listed. So obviously Lindstrom has a booth. They're in 1831. I'm imagining that Lindstrom and Stelfast will have a combined booth this year.
Oh, you'd have to imagine. It would not be possible for Stelfast not to be there, okay?
No. They're going to be there. I guess it's just on the floor plan here. It'll be combined. But it's strange to not see them with their own name there on the footprint.
Yeah, we have to find out, is it going to be the Lindstrom monkey? We don't know what's going to happen here. All to be revealed, okay?
Yeah, even more suspense than usual this year, Bri.
Yeah, not only is what color it is what's it called.
I'm guessing they're not going to be leaking any information either on that one, especially given the fact that I haven't been able to really get very much detail out of what's going on over there, you know, through our usual sources. So they keep a tight ship there. Right. Now, Brighton Best International, they've got, I think it's, well, no, I could see here, they've got the biggest footprint on the floor plan. And what are they going to fit, like 80, 90 BBI people in there? It's going to be a sea of red and black shirts.
Right, yeah. It means that Rosa Hearn is going to be rushing around organizing invitations to their BBI afternoon reception.
If history serves as a lesson, that's correct.
Right.
BBI never fails to bring a full lineup of fastener industry superstars, so see them all at the Vegas show, folks. It's a good chance, as we said, to make a direct connection. Again, clumsily developing on the theme of today's podcast, Bri.
Wow, done very well. Direct connect and direct connections. Maybe you need to quit while you're ahead.
Yeah, close enough. And I think we will. I think we'll call this one an episode. Don't miss episode 139, folks, when our very special guest, well, maybe I should keep it a surprise, or I'll just let the cat out of the bag now and build anticipation. We've been planning this for a while, folks, but we'll have an interview with none other than Brian Musker. Don't miss it.
Well, who's going to interview me? I mean, there's a few details you haven't really filled me in on here.
Yeah, I think we'll keep that part of it a secret for now, but let's just say it isn't going to be me. So there's the cliffhanger.
Wow.
It's going to be good, though.
Oh, okay.
Is it, Bri? Yeah, I mean, I should be asking you that.
We're good to go.
The answers to these and many other questions will be revealed when we connect again next time on Fully Threaded Radio. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yes, thank you. And I will know more then, too. Okay.
For Brian Musker, this is Eric Dudas. Get out there, sell some screws.
Tell your friends about FTR.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you next time.
Fully Threaded Radio is a production of Fasteners Clearinghouse. Music provided by Audionautix.